are in a horrible mood today.
Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak.
It's Sunday, April 27, 2025. This is your award-winning Give Our Nation Media Assassination, episode 1759.
This is No Agenda.
Vibe coding and broadcasting live from the heart of the Texas Hill Country right here in FEMA region number 6. In the morning, everybody. I'm Adam Curry.
And from northern Silicon Valley, where they want to round up the judges, I'm John C. Dvorak.
It's Crackpot and Buzzkill in the morning.
Yeah, best, funniest thing ever. Funniest thing ever. Rounding up the judges. Oh, no. It's a constitutional crisis. I love it. I have a clip. Do you have any clips of that?
I got plenty of clips.
Yep. Well, first, I need to tell you, I don't know if you've been following the news, but there has been quite the setback in peace negotiations. This is just breaking.
As of this morning, you're talking about this morning.
Breaking big setback in peace negotiations.
Yeah.
Between myself and Andrew Horowitz.
Oh.
He called me Saturday night. No. Yeah, Saturday night. And
you hung up on him.
He drunk called me.
That's not good.
From a party.
Saturday night's not.
From a party. He had a party with friends. He's like, hey.
He has these huge parties. I can see that.
Hey, man. Here's someone who wants to talk to you. And he puts me on with, a No Agenda producer who was like, I can't believe I'm talking to you. You saved me during COVID. I'm like, oh, well, that's very nice of you to say. I'm like, so did Andrew just sit there and go like, oh, I can call Curry whenever I want? She said, yeah, pretty much.
That's a funny idea. Yes, I can get a hold of the big boy.
I can talk to that man.
I have his number on speed dial.
Yes, you've seen him on Joe Rogan. I've got him right here. Let me call him for you. He always takes my call.
And so he pulled a Biden.
Yeah. A Biden?
Yes, what Hunter Biden used to do all the time.
Oh, Hunter Biden, yes. Yeah, but wait a minute. Then I'm Joe Biden in that case. I don't think that's very good.
Yes, that's what I'm thinking.
I don't like that so much.
Joe Biden.
So, looks like things are not over yet. Not over. Nope.
Well, at least the producer got to talk to you. That's sweet.
She was very nice. But, still, I mean, and I even said, Andrew, are you calling? Are you drunk? He said, yeah.
It should have been Saturday night's not a time to call.
I should have recorded it. That was my bad.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, I should have done that.
Well, then he'd have been really irked.
this is, and then we'll get to the judges. So, I had this Robert Sarah Pope pick in mind. When the Pope got sick, I was already looking around, and that was the first guy that came to mind. So I pick him on the last episode as kind of a long shot, but it's like, I think this is the guy. And now, have you seen this? He's gone viral. He has become the anti-globalist faithful's favorite new Pope. There's articles about him everywhere all of a sudden.
Well, people listen to our show.
At the Gateway Pundit? Well, maybe. At the Telegraph.
Well, if anyone's going to listen, it'd be them.
Yeah, but the Telegraph. Cardinal Robert Sarah Guinea is exactly the kind of anti-woke pope that many conservatives... Well,
that means the likelihood of him getting it is lessened.
It's just lessened. I know.
In fact, I have some pope... Well, let's start with that stuff. I got pope analysis.
Pope now. All right.
Let's start see what we got here.
Right. Hold on. You're a little low on volume today. I'm going to crank you
up. Well, give me a... Boost me. Boost.
You're boosted. Consider yourself boosted. All right.
Let's start with just the plain clips, which would be papal event and Trump report, PBS.
Ave Maria.
Before paying his respects at the coffin, President Trump sat down with Ukraine's President Zelensky for the first time since their rancorous confrontation in the Oval Office 2 months ago.
Rancorous.
Trump reportedly pressured Zelensky to accept a plan in which Ukraine will formally surrender territory occupied by Russia, including the Crimean Peninsula, as well as granting the United States an enormous stake in Ukraine's mineral wealth. As far as the White House is concerned, this is the only feasible deal. On the ex social media platform, Zelensky described the meeting as very symbolic and potentially historic. Thanking Trump, he said he was hoping for results on everything covered in their discussions: protecting the lives of Ukrainians, a full and unconditional ceasefire, and a reliable and lasting peace that would prevent another war from breaking out. But in a post on his Truth Social network, President Trump launched a broadside against Russia's Vladimir Putin. He said there was no reason to shoot missiles into civilian areas. It makes me think, he said, that maybe Putin doesn't want to stop the war and is just tapping me along. When Trump emerged into St. Peter's Square, he was met with silence. The contrast with Zelensky's appearance could not have been greater. Warm applause greeted the Ukrainian president as he took his seat. And then the grand ceremony began in earnest, with the coffin carried from the basilica into the square. The congregation was addressed by 91-year-old Italian Cardinal Giovanni Battista Re.
In this majestic St. Peter's Square, where Pope Francis celebrated the Eucharist so many times and presided over great gatherings over the past 12 years, we are gathered with sad hearts in prayer around his mortal remains.
I was reminded by our resident Catholic, Void Zero, it is pronounced Sarah. Sarah. Not Sarah.
Que Sarah, Sarah.
Pope Sarah, Sarah.
So there's one thing in that clip, and everybody reporting on this said that
about the applause for Zelensky and no applause for Trump.
No, actually, that was only reported by PBS.
Of course.
Everybody reported on Trump's post, and they, without question, they said, I think he's tapping me along.
Tapping me, was that in the post? Tapping me,
Yes, in the post. Everybody read it, and it's in there, it's in that clip. Mm-hmm. And oh, he's tapping me. What does that even mean? And no one's questioned it. Where does this come from? Is that code for something we don't know about? Maybe it's something he told, don't worry, Putin, when I use the word tapping, don't worry, we're not tapping out. I just found it peculiar that nobody, and you included right now.
Well, I thought it was a British thing.
Why would Trump be using a Britishism?
I don't know. Tapping. Because the what would the phrase be? It would be dragging me along.
Tap. No. Stringing.
Stringing. That's it. Stringing me along. Well, ChatGPT doesn't know it. ChatGPT says, what is that, a song? Tapping me along. Interesting.
And everybody read it
without question. Yeah.
Without wondering what the hell it means or why he said tapping. It's like Kofefi.
It's a blurt. It's a blurt. It's a mini blurt. It's a blurtlet.
Well, it didn't work because I'm the only one who seems to have caught it.
Tapping me along.
So let's go to Papal Event 2, where they wrap this up. And this is where PBS... I mean, they slammed Trump in that first clip about, Zelensky got applause and everyone's silent when Trump came in. So you're supposed to be silent anyway. But okay.
With talks about peace in Ukraine dominating the diplomatic agenda, the cardinal reminded the throng of Francis's despair at the futility of war.
Faced with the raging wars of recent years, with their inhuman horrors and countless deaths and destruction, Pope Francis incessantly raised his voice imploring peace. War, he said, is only the death of people and the destruction of homes, hospitals, and schools.
Then the cardinal named what some commentators interpreted as a barbed missive at President Trump and his wall on the Mexican border.
This is PBS?
Yeah.
It sounds...
They got this British MI6 guy that comes every once in a while and gives his reports.
It sounds like he's doing a newsreel from World War II.
Yeah.
War on the Mexican border.
On the Mexican border. La guerra.
War always leaves the world worse than it was before. It is always a painful and tragic defeat for everyone. Build bridges, not walls, was an exhortation he repeated many times.
In conclusion, Cardinal Battista Re appealed to Pope Francis in the afterlife.
Pope Francis used to conclude his speeches and also his private meetings by saying, "Do not forget to pray for me."
He used to say, like, "No gays." That's what he used to say in the private meetings.
Now, dear Pope Francis, we ask you to pray for us, and we ask you from heaven to bless the church, bless Rome, and bless the whole world.
After communion and an invocation to the saints and martyrs, the funeral service came to an end.
Before you move on to the analysis, I have three shorties I'd like to insert, if that's okay with you.
It's fine with me.
It's from Inside Edition.
With Deborah Norville?
Yeah, I didn't know that Deborah Norville had been downgraded to Inside Edition. Isn't that a downgrade?
She's been on Inside Edition. She's the one who saved the show after she got fired from the Today Show on NBC.
Oh, I completely forgot.
They brought her over there.
Yes,
like
I completely
20 years ago.
Yeah, well, there you go. I forgot about it. Here's her report that she filed.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us as we broadcast today from Vatican City. The funeral of Pope Francis will be taking place right here tomorrow at St. Peter's Square. 130 foreign delegations are confirmed to attend, including 50 heads of state and 10 reigning sovereigns. President Trump and First Lady Melania Trump will be here, along with former President Joe Biden, all to say their final farewells to the People's Pope.
The People's Pope. Did you know that he was the People's Pope?
I think I may have heard that before.
It doesn't sound right. He wasn't the People's Pope. He was the woke Pope.
He definitely was the woke Pope.
The Pope's lying in state came to an end today as the last of the mourners filed past his coffin. Pope Francis would have loved this moment when a lone little girl said her farewell. President Trump and First Lady Melania Trump left for the funeral today, praising the pontiff.
I met him twice. I thought he was a fantastic kind of a guy.
Hey, he wasn't a great pope. He was a fantastic
guy. Kind of a guy.
He was a kind of a guy, you know?
I thought he was.
That's how gangsters talk about each other. He was a fantastic kind of a guy.
I thought he was a fantastic kind of a guy.
Seating arrangements could be complicated. I spoke with CBS
Evening News. Hold on a second. You have to get, you know, Inside Edition does have some producers that I never heard that clip. From Trump saying that.
No.
That's a clip you want to use.
Yes.
It's great.
It's fantastic. That's why I'm playing the clips.
Inside Edition has done this. They had the little girl's part. I didn't know about that either.
Well, scripted, clearly.
Having a good soundbite is always a winner, especially if it's off. The three mainstream networks, they everything they do is almost identical.
Yeah, I know. I was finished. So.
Anyway, continue. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I thought he was a fantastic kind of a guy.
Seating arrangements could be complicated. I spoke with CBS Evening News co-anchor John Dickerson.
The President of the United States and First Lady will be here. I understand also former President Biden will be attending. What challenges, if any, does that propose?
At ceremonies like this, former presidents usually put away all of their past acrimony, and so you would expect that here. One would hope that tradition would hold in the behavior of the two past presidents, but tradition has been taking a bit of a pounding recently.
Oh, a tradition has been taking a bit of a pounding recently.
Really? One example?
None. But this little ditty was also something I don't think showed up anywhere but on Inside Edition.
The funeral is a security nightmare. These strange-looking weapons are drone busters.
Did you see the drone busters?
Yeah, they showed it. There was a lot of pictures.
Oh, they were showing it? Okay, all right.
Yep. They jammed the signal to a drone. There's also an extraordinary media operation underway in preparation for Saturday's historic funeral. I spoke with ABC News 2020 co-anchor Deborah Roberts.
This is a pope who touched people around the globe. They call him the People's Pope. And this is a man who really just embraced anybody, the poor, the least among us.
He embraced everybody, the People's Pope. He was literally pulling his hands away from people. Remember that? He's like, "Ooh, don't touch me, you dirty, dirty pleb." I remember. I remember these things. The People's Pope. All right. That's it. That's all I got. Just want a little intermezzo there for you.
I have a list that I was sent of all the bad things this guy did in terms of traditional Catholicism.
Like appointing fake cardinals in China, for instance?
Yeah, well, that letting the Chinese, the government, pick the cardinals.
Well, there you go, yeah.
Named pro-LGBT clergy into as cardinals. Honored Martin Luther, that's who broke up the cat. You know, yeah. Just basically began the whole Protestantism thing, and he honored him.
There you go.
Which is like what? he criticized large Catholic families who breed like rabbits, quote unquote.
I forgot that one. Stop breeding like rabbits.
Which is like, you know, of course we have now we have this population decline of Western civilization.
Yes, and
this isn't helping.
Well, he was the globalist pope. That's why he was the you'll be own nothing and you'll be happy. Oh wait, that was the other pope. That was Schwab, Pope Schwab.
Approved Holy Communion for adulterers.
Oh no, shocking.
Shamed Catholics into taking the COVID shot.
That was a big one.
He promote, what's the one he's got on here? This list is a mile long. I'm going to find a couple of gems, and there's one I'm looking for, which is where he promoted, depopulation of the world.
Yeah.
Promoted depopulation. This is kind of a relentlessly belittled traditional Catholics as backwards, rigid.
Mm-hmm.
Self-absorbed, told an atheist journalist that sinful souls are not punished. He didn't think there was a hell. Ushered in a kind of a Marxism model.
Yes.
Anyway, goes on. I told Muslims to stay Muslim. That's a good one.
Do your thing, man. Do your thing.
The list is a mile long, and it's just like one thing after another.
Therefore, the people's pope. The people's pope.
Somehow yes.
The people's pope. Yes.
All right. I think we're on. We went to clip two. I think we got that. Let's go to the analysis.
Yes. Okay. Also from PBS, which is always on target.
John Allen has covered the Vatican for 30 years. He's editor of Crux, an online site that covers the Vatican and the Catholic Church.
Crux? Is that the name of the site?
Crux.
Crux.
Yeah.
John, practically all the cardinals who are eligible to vote, that means the cardinals who are under the age of 80, were at today's funeral. They'll be in Rome leading up to the conclave. In those days, are they going to be talking to each other, either formally or informally, about who they might see as the next pope?
Oh, absolutely. They'll be talking to one another about who they see as the next pope. That is, after all, the business they have been called to Rome to perform. And so in these daily meetings of cardinals, where they're meeting every morning, called the General Congregation Meetings, some of that is procedural, but some of it allows cardinals the opportunity to talk to one another about what they see as the issues facing the church, to sort through where the church stands and where these cardinals believe it needs to go.
Specifically at this time right now, what are some of the considerations the cardinals will be thinking about?
I think fundamentally the issue that facing every conclave is, do you want to keep going in terms of the papacy that just ended, or do you want to try something else? But beyond that, there is a complicated sort of bushel basket full of issues they'll be looking at from...
Bushel basket full? That's an odd way of putting it. A bushel basket full.
Sort of bushel basket full of issues they'll be looking at from geopolitics. We're entering an era where old alliances seem to be falling apart and new ones are coming into view. And they'll want somebody who can steer the church safely through those storms, to internal church debates over contentious matters such as women and outreach to the LGBTQ plus community, to more broad social concerns such as migration and climate change and poverty.
All papal things.
Climate change.
Yeah. PBS.
That's fun. That's another offensive
PBS
thing.
The papal broadcast system.
So now that there's a kind of a kicker in the second part, I thought this second clip is quite entertaining.
With talks about peace in Ukraine dominating the diplomatic agenda.
No, you're not playing anal too.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right.
The viewership of the movie Conclave spiked after the news of Pope Francis's death. I think a lot of people think because they've seen the movie, they know what a conclave is. You've written a book about conclaves. How close is it to what actually happens?
I've been telling people that taking the movie Conclave as a guide to a real papal election is like taking that zany 80s Mel Brooks comedy Spaceballs as a guide to real space travel. This is old world politics, where everything is far more genteel and indirect and subtle. Now, don't get me wrong, and let's not be naive. There is real political sausage being ground during this period. But this isn't the Iowa caucus. This is politics Vatican style.
How do they know that more people are watching that? No one divulges any numbers.
I don't know. I just thought the Spaceballs comment was funny.
This is lame.
Oh, please. It was a good comment about the movie. Of course, I didn't see the movie, so exactly. I don't know.
You didn't see the movie, so you have no idea.
I do know the guy at the end of the movie, the Pope they picked as a hermaphrodite.
Well, not entirely, but yeah, close enough.
You saw it?
I saw the movie. We discussed it. Yes, I saw the movie. Not a hermaphrodite. No, not a hermaphrodite, but had some kind of appendicitis, and the doctors went in and found that the then ultimately chosen Pope had ovaries.
So the Pope had ovaries and a dick.
That is the implication.
Well, that's a hermaphrodite.
I thought the hermaphrodite means you have both sex organs as well. So it wasn't clear from the movie, and that was, quite frankly, a disappointment. Yes.
It seems like a long way. The movie sounds like a Shaggy Dog story.
No, it's like they literally inserted that nonsense at the end for no good reason. It was like it was almost like a Madame Butterfly. And they go, oh, it's a girl. Or boy, whatever it was.
Boy, it's a boy.
It's a boy. It wasn't a girl, it's a boy. Yeah, it was just like, It was completely unnecessary for the rest of the movie.
Really? So they didn't need a punchline at all?
I don't think they needed a punchline. Certainly not that one. It made no sense.
Well, I like the Spaceballs analogy. There's a third clip here, which is misspelled papal. I got two P's on it.
The cardinals go into the conclave with a candidate in mind or a group of candidates, likely candidates in mind?
Now, often cardinals do file into the Sistine Chapel with a fairly strong sense for whom they intend to cast their vote. I mean, bear in mind, the last two conclaves, that is the conclave of 2005 that elected Pope Benedict XVI and the conclave of 2013 that elected Pope Francis, both of those were over in about a day and a half. Now, that would be completely impossible if it weren't for the fact that a number of cardinals had made up their minds before they actually went into the Sistine Chapel about which way they wanted to go.
I know you said this isn't the Iowa caucuses, but is it possible to handicap the potential popes, the likely people who could be pope?
Well, you know, there's an old Roman saying that he who enters a conclave as a pope exits as a cardinal, meaning sometimes getting that kind of talk does you more harm than good. But that said, we can look at the reputations cardinals have held over the years, the significance of the positions, that is, the jobs that they have held. One odds-on favorite, and somebody who certainly will get a very serious look, would be Italian Cardinal Pietro Parolin, who was the Secretary of State, that is, the top aide and the top diplomat under Pope Francis, who would be seen as somebody who would, in some ways, carry forward the Francis legacy, but is an extraordinarily stable, careful, measured man. And given what's happening in the world, that's a prescription I think a number of cardinals might find attractive.
Yeah, they're supposed to listen to the Holy Spirit. They're not supposed to be politicking.
Well, the funny thing is the irony of that guy's last comments was that if you enter as the Pope, which he now just named somebody who entered as the Pope,
mm-hmm.
Pietro guy, who I thought would be the guy I picked.
That's your guy. Yeah.
Would not make it. And so the same would hold true for the Syrah guy that you picked because he's getting a lot of ink.
For a whole bunch of reasons, I got a lot of emails about my Pope pick. But everyone would be very happy, which, you know, makes me wonder. But that's my pick. Well, I'm standing by it. That's what I got to do.
Yeah, I think it's. I think your pick is a great pick, to be honest about it. And he's old. He's gonna not going to be there forever. So you got. Oh, we got the black guy in. He won't be here for long. I mean, they won't even let Cardinals under 80 vote for the Pope, and this guy's 80.
No. Up to 80 as far as you can't, not over 80. I don't think you can vote if you're 80.
No, I said that's what I meant. You can't, when you're 80 and older, you can't vote for the Pope.
Yeah.
So how can you be the Pope? It makes no sense. So
and I've heard this guy talk, admittedly only in French. Oh man, he's not one of these. He doesn't. How about a Pope with a clear voice?
I think that Sarah guy is a, or Sarah. I think he speaks about four languages. I think he speaks Italian, English, French,
Italian, and papal. Latin? I don't know. Three or four. Fluently. Yeah, we'll see. All eyes on the Vatican. Now we go into the big smoke thing. I'm going to be waiting for the smoke.
The smoke,
yeah. It's good branding, though. When you think about it, those guys, they know how to brand themselves. You know, you burning up the lots and then mixing it with the chemical to be black or white smoke. I mean, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I had a meme about it in a newsletter. You probably missed it.
I did. I'm sorry. I was out. I didn't have a chance. Now, did you send another newsletter? Did you send a follow-up?
Yeah, I sent a second note because things had fallen off the cliff. And what? So I had to send out the emergency plain text.
Did get stuff get trapped in the spans?
I don't
again,
think it might have been a little bit, but I don't think that was the cause. I think it was just a lull.
April. It's always April. There were a couple of interesting terms in this ABC report. It's from your girl Martha Raddatz. Or what do we call now? Radnitz. Martha Radnitz. This is the continuation because, oh, Lord, we need to continue with Signalgate. But listen to these terms.
We're going to get the latest now on the controversy surrounding Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth. New security questions raised from his use of a commercial messaging app for sensitive.
Commercial messaging app? Signal is a nonprofit, first of all. And it comes back a couple times. The commercial.
I've heard this too. I've heard this comment too. They use that term.
Yeah, which is
specifically what they want. What they're trying to imply is that this is some off the shelf, bonehead product that anyone can pick up, and as opposed to a secretive government system that can only be used by, spies and spooks.
By Rocky and Bullwinkle, yeah.
Security questions raised from his use of a commercial messaging app for sensitive national security communication. Chief Global Affairs anchor Martha Raddatz tracking that story. Good morning, Martha.
Hello.
Good morning, George. This morning, more alarming news out of the Pentagon. Sources telling ABC that Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth accused the then acting chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Admiral Chris Grady, of leaking information to the press. The sources say Hegseth was shouting at Admiral Grady after a story appeared about Elon Musk's possible top secret briefing by the Joint Chiefs on China. The Wall Street Journal first to report that Hegseth demanded proof from Admiral Grady that he didn't leak the story, yelling, "I'll hook you up to a expletive polygraph." And this morning, Hegseth's press spokesman denying that the defense secretary had the commercial app Signal on commercial a personal app. Computer inside his Pentagon office. Sources told ABC that the computer...
Hold on a second. Now, this was the last report we got was it was on his personal phone. Now she's saying he was running Signal, the commercial app, on his computer inside the Pentagon.
Yeah, so, this has been the change in
narrative. That's a big change.
Now, the narrative's been changed. There's a couple of things. And they also left out the fact that according to the guy who's the chief national security advisor for Trump, it was a spook, was told by the CIA that this is the product to use.
This is the one to use, yeah. And so he was using it on his computer. Now, you can use Signal on your computer.
Sure.
But this is
it's like me, my text messaging. Yes, I do everything on the computer. I use Google Voice for texting because I can type away. I don't have to poke away with my thumbs and get,
You don't have to extract your phone from your drawer. Let's be honest
about
it.
Take the phone from the drawer.
That's so right.
Denying that the defense secretary had the commercial app Signal on a personal computer inside his Pentagon office. Sources told ABC that the computer was connected to an unsecured commercial line, what is known as a dirty line, since it does not have five.
A dirty line, yes. This entire show operates on a dirty line.
Firewall protection. All.
Whoa. Hold on a second. Let me hear that again.
Commercial line, what is known as a dirty line, since it does not have firewall protection. All this.
Firewall protection. That's kind of skipping along. Okay.
As we've learned this morning from sources, that Hegseth's chief of staff has now departed the Pentagon. Joe Casper will now take on a part-time advisory role in the government. We are told Casper's departure follows the dismissal of top aides to Hegseth. Those aides were escorted out of the building by security, George. Yeah.
And so now comes another piece of information. It sounds like Pete Hegseth is taking a page out of the John C. Dvorak handbook.
Yeah, real exodus there. Meantime, the New York Times reported just moments ago that these phone numbers...
Well, it's not an exodus if you're kicked out. The real exodus there. They're not leaving on their own accord. They're being kicked out, no?
I think one of them quit.
Okay, well, then it's not a real exodus.
Yeah, real exodus there. Meantime, the New York Times reported just moments ago.
And you used the word exodus?
Yeah.
An exodus is it three or four guys. An exodus. If 245 people left, walked out the same day, I would call that an exodus.
Yes.
Yeah, real exodus there. Meantime, the New York Times reported just moments ago that these phone numbers that Hegseth was using were actually available online.
Oh, like Google phone. He had a Google phone number like you, John. Google, just found online.
Yeah, George, you know, any personal phone is vulnerable, especially if you are the defense secretary. Foreign adversaries would like those numbers, and those numbers are pretty easy to find. And Hegseth had highly sensitive information on his phone in those Signal chats.
Just hold on a second.
Yeah.
So I have your phone number.
Yeah.
And you have highly sensitive information on your phone.
Yeah.
What do I do? Call you up and say, hey, push that. Let me walk you through some process here so you can send me all that information. I mean, what has that got to do with anything? You got his phone number. So what?
Yeah. Well, if you're Huawei, you're in the system.
If you're Huawei, this is true. You could probably, there might be a back door into the phone that... If you have the number, you need the number to get into the back door, or if you have the database that the NSA maintains and you need to just give them the number and they cough back every message you've ever done or received, that's different.
I think what we can conclude is that this reporting is very flimsy. They're using all kinds of adjectives to try and hype it up with commercial app and dirty phone line and found the numbers online. This is just exactly what it was always intended to be. It's some form of railroading for the military industrial complex or the neocons or whoever wants Hegseth out.
Foreign adversaries would like those numbers, and those numbers are pretty easy to find.
Hey, Pete, can I have your digits?
And Hegseth had highly sensitive information on his phone in those Signal chats about the attack plans in Yemen.
Highly sensitive. Okay. Well, there you go. Martha Raddatz on the beat, everybody. The world is safe.
ABC's got issues.
Yeah.
I think they're more compromised than CBS.
Yeah, I was trying to clip some of the latest on the media from NPR.
Your buddy. Yeah.
Yeah. It was very difficult because they're just talking about how Brendan Carr, the new FCC commissioner, how he's going after them. And I think, NBC has a $20 billion lawsuit against it? CBS. From Trump. $20 billion lawsuit.
Yeah, that's been going on. That's ongoing.
I know. And we're also under investigation. This is the problem with the report. We're under investigation because the FCC believes that we don't have underwriting. We're doing commercial messages. And then they went on to have no examples or even explain what the difference is. It was very disappointing. I was ready to clip a whole bunch, but it just didn't happen. Anyway, so...
Well, yeah, Hegseth is under fire. I don't think he's handling it well.
No.
He should be more glib and less angry.
Yes. So we don't know exactly what was discussed. We had the president meeting with Zelensky, which was kind of a cool move where you had that huge room, I presume somewhere in Vatican City, and they put two chairs right in the middle. And there's Zelensky is hanging out with Macron, and you know he's doing his little tête-à-tête. And then Trump comes in, and they sit down, and I guess...
I have some analysis of this.
Well, I'll play the news report first.
President Trump meeting face-to-face with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky Saturday at St. Peter's Basilica, the two discussing a ceasefire deal. Zelensky sounding confident after the meeting, posting he's hoping for results and ultimately a full and unconditional ceasefire. After the meeting, President Trump strongly rebuking President Putin on Truth Social, accusing Russia's leader of tapping him along and saying, quote, maybe
there
he doesn't want to stop the war, adding, if the missile attacks continue on Ukraine, he may be forced to impose sanctions on Russia. The growing frustration from the president comes after his special envoy, Steve Witkoff, and Russian President Vladimir Putin met face-to-face for the second time Friday. The meeting lasting 3 hours and being called constructive and a step in the right direction. But so far, neither side has agreed to a ceasefire, and President Trump saying this Friday about a deadline.
I have my own deadline, and we want it to be fast, and the prime minister is helping us. He wants it to be fast too, so we have a deadline, and after that we're gonna have a very much different attitude.
Yeah, he has his own deadline. He's got his own deadline. He's got
she dropped the tapping along also with yes. That comment.
This is actually, what do you call that when something does not show up in Google? We had a word for that back in the day. What's that word?
Google wash?
No, not Google wash. No. If it doesn't show up in Google, then it has a term. That doesn't happen very often, but this tapping along is one of those phrases. It does Google nothing. No search engine knows about it. That's interesting. All right, your NPR analysis.
Well, let's start with the first of all, the tapping along here with the Trump Vatican Zelensky NPR clip, which is the kind of what you played, but this is their version.
President Trump is back in the U.S. after his very brief trip to Vatican City to attend Pope Francis's funeral. As NPR's Deepa Shivaram reports, while there, he met with Ukraine's Zelensky.
The meeting between Trump and Zelensky took place in St. Peter's Basilica shortly before the funeral program began. The White House hasn't released any detail of the conversation between the two leaders, but Trump posted on his social media platform, Truth Social, and said he thinks Russian leader Vladimir Putin might be, quote, tapping me along and doesn't want to end the war. He was critical of Russia's attacks on civilian areas and floated the idea of sanctions against Russia, but provided no further detail. Trump is spending the rest of the weekend at his golf club in Bedminster, New Jersey. Deepa Shivaram, NPR News.
Okay. Tapping along.
Pretty straightforward. They get the tapping along comes up again, and it's straightforward. They don't talk about, you know, big applause for Zelensky and they booed Trump. And so now we go to an analysis, and they bring in this guy McFaul. If you see this guy, he's got this dour quality to him. He used to be an ambassador. I think he's a spook. Trump hater to the core, and it's. So he's going to be biased and he's going to see nothing good going on. But everything that Trump did that he thought was positive, he does say, but it's all, you know, kind of neoliberal crap. But here we go.
President Trump met with Ukraine's president, Volodymyr Zelensky, at the Vatican this morning. A photo shows the two leaders sitting face to face, huddled together in seemingly deep conversation on the sidelines of Pope Francis's funeral. The White House says the two had, quote, a very productive discussion. And on social media earlier today, President Trump criticized his Russian counterpart, writing, quote, there was no reason for Putin to be shooting missiles into civilian areas. It makes me think that maybe he doesn't want to stop the war. He's just tapping me along. This all comes a day after U.S. Envoy Steve Witkoff met with President Putin in Moscow to discuss a possible end to the war in Ukraine. Here to talk about what all of this high-level diplomacy means is Michael McFaul. He served as the former U.S. ambassador to Russia during the Obama administration and is currently the director of the Freeman Spogli Institute for International Studies at Stanford University. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with this meeting. What do you make of the meeting? What do you make of the fact that afterward Trump posted on social media criticizing Vladimir Putin, not Volodymyr Zelensky?
Well, I'm glad they had the meeting. Anytime they can meet, especially one-on-one, without cameras, without staff, that's always a good thing.
Without cameras? Because
President Zelensky gets to explain his position directly to President Trump. The reaction from President Zelensky on social media was very positive, and other staff people have said positive things. And as you just noted, President Trump also did criticize Putin. He suggested that maybe he's not serious about peace and that there should be sanctions. And that's, in my view, a correct assessment of where Putin has been so far. And that would be a correct prescription to try to put pressure on Russia, something President Trump and his team have never done.
Yeah, even Bolton came out and went, oh, this is good. This is good.
Whenever these guys are all on the same side, they're all Putin haters, Trump haters. And so when Trump looks like he's standing up to Putin, this is great. And,
yeah.
And if he got closer and like started threatening a war, it'd be even greater. And if we bombed Iran, that would be fabulous. These guys would be all over themselves, all over.
Yeah, nice. Yeah.
All right, onward. Sorry.
But I'd also point out that President Trump sounds always tough on social media and says a lot of things rhetorically and very rarely follows up with concrete actions when we're talking about pressure on Putin, pressure on Russia.
Trump said yesterday he thinks Ukraine and Russia are close. How do you read that? What do you think is happening in the coming weeks? Do you think this war could end?
I'm not sure. I worry that Putin is not serious about ending this war. I think Putin thinks time's on his side. Trump and his team will eventually get frustrated and walk away. They'll cut military assistance to Ukraine, and that's all in Putin's favor for continuing the war and to try to conquer the territory on the ground that he has already annexed on paper. You buy a map in Russia today, and it has four of those regions of Ukraine as part of the Russian Federation.
Curious what your best realistic read is right now, not what you would like to see, but what you think is realistic.
Well, I would disconnect two different things that get conflated. There's a ceasefire, and then there's a permanent peace agreement to end the war. And I think those are two very different things. I think most immediately, getting a ceasefire, and even if it has to be a minimum one, getting a ceasefire that both sides say we are not going to attack civilian targets, that would be a great achievement for the Ukrainians. Remember, Putin constantly, every day, and just a few days ago, again in their capital of Kyiv, is attacking civilian targets. I call that terrorism. That would be great to end. And then that moment, if you got to a ceasefire, could create the permissive conditions for a longer negotiation that I think could go on for months, if not years, about some permanent peace settlement. And I'm not optimistic they would ever get it, but at least the war would stop without forcing Zelensky to acknowledge annexation. And I think, tragically, that's probably the best outcome.
Google whack. That was the term.
I don't recall that term.
Yes, Google whack. It's a Google whack. Tapping along is not found in a Google search. It is a Google whack. So, okay, so we have all that taking place, but meanwhile, the president is definitely saying that it appears like that there are already some terms that have been negotiated, particularly when it comes to Crimea.
Steve Witkoff, President Trump's special envoy, met with Russian President Vladimir Putin Friday for a fourth time to discuss a peace deal with Ukraine.
Russia and Ukraine, I think they're coming along, we hope. Very fragile.
The president said he's not placing a deadline on the talks, but wants to get something done as quickly as possible.
We're going to try and get out of war so that we can save 5,000 people a week. I think we're pretty close.
Russia's foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, told CBS News Face the Nation moderator Margaret Brennan he agreed with Trump's assessment that talks are moving in the right direction, but wouldn't discuss details.
We are really polite people. And unlike some others, we never discuss in public what is being discussed in negotiations. Otherwise, negotiations are not serious.
No.
A major sticking point in negotiations is Crimea, seized by Russia in 2014. In a new interview with Time magazine, President Trump said Crimea will stay with Russia. But Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says he cannot accept that because it goes against his country's constitution. Both President Zelensky and Trump will be in Rome for the Pope's funeral on Saturday, where the president says it's possible that they'll talk.
Oh, so now all of it's like Zelensky, they just keep telling him, no, just keep it going. Whatever they want, just say, no, I can't do that. I can't have elections because that's unconstitutional, but I can't give up Crimea because that goes against our constitution. There is no, they have no intention of a truce. I don't see it. I really don't see
that we're getting accurate information.
Well,
that's what I don't see.
Now, like a good businessman running our country, President Trump has put a hedge in place, and he sent little Marco down to over to Africa to take care of the deal.
The Democratic Republic of Congo and Rwanda have signed what they're calling a pathway to peace in a U.S. brokered agreement. As the Rwanda-backed M23 keep up gaining ground, the Congo found it crucial to accept the offer made by the U.S.
A necessary step towards peace taken with resolve and purpose. This moment carries particular weight for the Democratic Republic of the Congo, in Goma, in Bukavu, and beyond.
The Declaration of Principles, Rwanda says, opens the door to a definitive deal.
Our common aim is to conclude a comprehensive peace agreement as soon as possible. But there are no shortcuts or quick fixes, and we have to do the hard work to get it done right, once and for all.
The long simmering tensions between the two neighboring countries have led to one of the world's largest humanitarian crises. Yet, the diplomatic breakthrough the U.S. have facilitated is no accident. Trump's administration is in talks with Kinshasa to invest billions of dollars in minerals. DRC is the world's largest producer of cobalt and has vast deposits such as gold and copper.
I think we're looking at some rare earths coming from the DRC.
You know, we can talk about rare earths coming from here and there and all we want, but the problem is, and it's always ignored in these reports, we can't process these rare earths. That's the problem. It's not that China has nothing but rare earths. China has 100% of the world's processing capability.
I thought Canada had some. Doesn't Canada have processing?
Not that
capability?
I know of. All I know is that China, we dig up rare earths, we ship it to China, they process it, and we get it back.
Well, you don't have to get mad about it.
I'm mad at the fact that they keep not reporting on this.
Okay.
So what? We got a rare earth deal. So what? We can't do anything with it.
Well, what does it take to process rare earths? Can we start rare earth processing? Does that take 100 years to get it going?
I think, I personally don't know. But I will say what I suspect.
Okay.
It's a mess.
Yeah, probably
is. It's a dangerous thing to do. It's probably toxic as hell. Ruins everything around it. It's got to be a laughable mess. That's the only thing I can think of. Otherwise, we'd be doing it.
Send it to Canada. That's
I don't think Canada's doing it.
No, they should start.
We don't want to get rid of Canada.
It's a great idea, Canada. Why don't you process this? We'll drop all the tariffs. Mm-hmm. But here's more evidence that I really don't believe that they want any kind of truce, and nor do we, because our boy over there, our sales guy in the EU, we all know him, Mark Rutte.
Yeah, your buddy.
Mark Rutte. He just keeps on harping the same thing. It's got to be more money, and for a long time.
The Kremlin says an offensive by the Ukrainian army in Russia's Kursk region is over. That emerged in a briefing between the Russian President Vladimir Putin and the head of Russia's general staff, Valery Gerasimov, who said the last occupied settlement in the region had just been recaptured.
The plans of the Kyiv regime to create a so-called strategic bridgehead and disrupt our offensive in the Donbas have failed.
Russia also confirmed for the first time that North Korean soldiers have been fighting alongside Russian troops in Kursk. The Russian Defense Ministry released this video footage showing aerial shots and soldiers running and others issuing instructions to raise a Russian flag over a village in the region. Ukrainian officials, however, say the fighting is still continuing. Ukraine's general staff said the statements of representatives of the high command.
This is the wrong clip. How come you didn't stop me?
Ugh. Well, I was waiting for you to cut in with your Rutte voice.
It's the wrong clip. I'm sorry.
NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte has urged all 32 member nations to devote more funds, equipment, and political energy to the world's largest military alliance. The move comes as European countries ramp up defense spending to meet the agreed-upon 2% threshold ahead of the upcoming NATO summit in The Hague in June. It also follows threats by U.S. President Donald Trump of walking away from NATO if Europe does not increase defense spending to at least 5% of GDP.
Here we go.
It has to be considerably higher than this famous 2%, which we wanted to achieve by 2024.
No, it must be 5.
We have seen the last couple of days countries like Belgium and Spain and Italy saying we will reach the 2% in time for the summit. So that's not 2024, but close.
Close.
But clearly with 2%, we cannot defend NATO territory. It has to be considerably higher. And I've said before.
You have to understand, it is not enough money. We can't defend you. We cannot defend NATO territory without the right amount of monies.
That has to be considerably north of 3%.
North.
Rutte insists the increase in spending is to ensure NATO's safety and not just match the U.S. He added that the alliance must be fully competent and ready to weather any storm, particularly against one common threat.
What could that common threat be?
We all agree in NATO that Russia is the long-term threat to NATO territory.
We all agree. It is the long-term threat to NATO territory.
To the whole of the Euro-Atlantic territory.
There we go.
The comments came during a visit to Washington to meet with high-ranking U.S. defense officials, including Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth. The NATO boss was also questioned by reporters on the ongoing peace talks to end the war in Ukraine, but declined to give his opinion as to not hinder the process.
I think this is all part of the forthcoming Mar-a-Lago Accords. The whole, if I put it all together, you know, with the trillion-dollar coin, economic concessions if you buy our military gear. So no tariffs if you, but we'll protect you as long as, you spend the money. Of course, dollar devaluation, which I think is happening. But it's going to be, the tariffs is going to be linked to the United States protecting you. And then we'll have the 100-year bonds or whatever. And it was actually, I come up with this. Didn't you have a clip on the last show from Besant at railing on the IMF and the World Bank about their climate change nonsense?
I'd have to look into the clip list, but I don't know specifically what clip you're talking about. Let's just play it again.
Well, I think that's what it was, because I went back and I listened to Besant talking at, it's like the international finance.
I had two Besson clips.
Let me see what they were.
The first one was about him railing on the Chinese.
Yeah.
And the other one was just a generalized, not as a strong a clip. Okay.
Well, if you listen to the opening of that speech that he did, here's what he said.
In the final months of World War II, Western leaders convened the greatest economic minds of their generation. Their task? To build a new financial system. At a quiet resort high up in the mountains of New Hampshire, they laid the foundation for Pax Americana. The architects of Bretton Woods recognized that a global economy required global coordination. To encourage that coordination, they created the IMF and the World Bank. These twin institutions were born after a period of intense geopolitical and economic volatility. The purpose of the IMF and the World Bank was to better align national interests with international order, thereby bringing stability to an unstable world. In short, their purpose was to restore and preserve balance. This remains the purpose of the Bretton Woods institutions. Yet everywhere we look across the international system today, we see imbalance. The good news, it doesn't have to be this way. My goal this morning is to outline a blueprint to restore equilibrium to the global financial system and the institutions designed to uphold it.
Sounds like a new accord to me. And what the IMF, their original task, as I understand it, was to allow countries to devalue or revalue their currency, but with everybody knowing it. And so you had to go and get permission from the IMF, and that's how they provided stability, and that's how the whole foreign exchange business grew out of that, and of course eventually went completely nuts. So he wants to rebalance everything, and then here's his clip on China.
In response to President Trump's tariff announcements, more than 100 countries have approached us, wanting to help rebalance global trade. These countries have responded openly and positively to the president's actions to create a more balanced international system. We are engaged in meaningful discussions and look forward to talking with others. China, in particular, is in need of a rebalancing. Recent data shows the Chinese economy tilting even further away from consumption toward manufacturing. China's economic system, with growth driven by manufacturing exports, will continue to create even more serious imbalances with its trading partners if the status quo is allowed to continue. China's current economic model is built on exporting its way out of its economic troubles. It's an unsustainable model that is not only harming China, but the entire world. China needs to change. The country knows it needs to change. Everyone knows it needs to change. And we want to help it change because we need rebalancing too. China can start by moving its economy away from export overcapacity and towards supporting its own consumers and domestic demand. Such a shift would help with global rebalancing that the world desperately needs.
So rebalancing.
This is the most presumptuous. That last part is the part that you're talking about that I played in the last show.
Yes.
This is the most presumptuous thing. Who says that China doesn't? We wish we had more. Our trade wasn't so unbalanced. This bull crap. They've been saying for years that they want to own the manufacturing space for the whole world, and then by some date they always have some date in the future where they expect to dominate all of it.
China.
And so what is he talking about?
Well, he's talking about doing the exact same thing. We want to export.
Yeah.
You can't be all the exporter. We want to export. And we've been talking to the Chinese about it, or have we?
U.S. President Donald Trump said on Thursday that the U.S. and China have been in trade talks after Beijing denied any negotiations on tariffs. During a meeting with Norway's prime minister at the White House, Trump told reporters that his officials had a meeting with their Chinese counterparts on Thursday morning.
Well, they had a meeting this morning, so I can't tell you. It doesn't matter who they is. We may reveal it later, but meetings this morning, and we've been meeting with China.
Earlier, China's foreign ministry denied Trump's assertion that the two sides were involved in active negotiations.
That's Chinese for fake news.
The Chinese comments came after Trump said Tuesday that the final tariff rate on China's exports would come down substantially from the current 145%. The trade war has raised fears of a global economic slowdown, with the International Monetary Fund, IMF, slashing its 2025 growth forecast from 3.3% to 2.8%.
So, you know, if these Mar-a-Lago accords actually happen and they try to get everybody together and they try to rebalance, I understand security guarantees. I understand debt restructuring. And I think actually President Trump could probably do that, could convince everybody to take a 100-year bond at a much lower interest rate. Tariffs as leverage, but dollar devaluation. I have two questions. One, how do you devalue your currency? How does the dollar devalue? What is the key lever to doing that? Oh, and then all of a sudden you went away. I hate it. Did that thing just do it again? Hold on, John. It did it again. It just decides all of a sudden I'm just going to use a different interface. These guys screwed. Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, no, we're completely gone. CleanFeed decided to change the interface again.
This is doing this a lot to you.
Yes. So anyway, my question again: how does one devalue the dollar? How do you do that?
Well, you don't. For one thing, the dollar will slide up and down in its value naturally, and it's not as devalued as it once was. I'd say I don't know how many years ago when the euro was $1.26. I remember that because I think I was in Europe that year, and it's not like the peso where they all of a sudden make an announcement that it's worth half as much.
Well, that's what I'm asking.
Because we're the reserve currency. We can't do that.
Can we do it if we flood the world with stable coin? Would that do it?
I don't know why you want to do that.
I'm not saying I want to do anything. I hear that I read all the time about dollar devaluation, and how does China devalue their currency?
China's currency is not a reserve currency, and they just arbitrarily move it up and down based on.
But how do you do
that? Central planning. You have to have central planning. It's not possible. We can't go devalue the dollar. It's not going to happen.
I'm asking you for the mechanism. So let's say, how does China just wakes up one day and says, we're worth less?
Yeah.
That's how they do it. Do they change the exchange rates on their end? I'm asking for the mechanics.
No, they changed the exchange rate.
So why couldn't we do that with a dollar? You could do that with it. You could say the exchange rate is now this. I'm not saying we should.
The dollar would collapse. The whole world economic system would fall apart.
Oh, who says that's not the idea?
We don't want that. You have a worldwide depression out of a job. We could talk about lousy donations.
Man, you're fighting me like I'm the one saying this should happen. I'm just reading about it, and I'm trying to understand the mechanisms of it.
Well, I don't know what the mechanism would be.
Well, could the mechanism be by creating a flood of new dollars in the form of stablecoin? That would just by having...
Just start the printing presses up. That'll do it.
Same thing. It's the same
thing. Well, hell with the stablecoin. You don't need the stablecoin. Just crank out the... Just change the money supply. Biden kind of did that. It cheapened the dollar.
It's more fun.
It's one way of doing it.
But it's more fun to say stablecoin.
Yeah, you like the word stablecoin.
You are in a horrible mood today. I don't know. What, did you get out on the wrong side of the bed, or what happened to you? You got up on the wrong.
What the hell am I doing over here on this side of the bed? So, how does people get out of bed on the wrong side of the bed? I think that's an interesting phrase.
Is this part of the Horowitz rift? Are you mad being the child in the middle? I mean, what's going on, man? You're in a bad mood. I'm just trying to get a little conversation going.
No, you're just
going.
Saying I'm in a bad mood. You're bringing up topics that I can't. You're asking me questions I can't answer.
Oh, then just say I can't answer it instead.
I said that. I already said I don't know.
Instead, you said you don't want to do that.
Except you can do the printing press thing. That will devalue the dollar.
But just hypothetically, just follow with me. You could also do a fake printing press with stablecoin.
I don't know what that even means. That's the problem.
Well, you create more dollars, only these are digital dollars, just like the EU is going to do with the digital euro. Everyone's going to be doing this. This is in the cards.
So the digital dollar is the stable coin, is the same thing?
Yeah. That's the yes. You make us when you buy a treasury, you for every dollar of treasury bill that you purchase, you get to create a stable coin. There are hundreds of billions of stable coins already in circulation based upon this. That's what Tether does. So they have already done this. And that's what Lutnick was doing with Cantor Fitzgerald. They are going to be the biggest provider of liquidity or, I guess, backing of stablecoin.
Sounds like economic mumbo jumbo.
All economics is mumbo jumbo as far as I'm concerned. But I think that's part of the plan. Just create stable coin that could devalue the dollar. That is the same as a printing press, only it's not the same as the money supply, like M2 or whatever. Anyway, I'm just waiting for the Mar-a-Lago Accord. That's what I'm waiting for.
But you have some hang up on this Mar-a-Lago Accords.
Because I coined it. Now everybody's using it. I talked about it first.
Okay.
It's just like the Pope. Everyone's listening to our show and they're not donating.
Well, that's for sure.
These guys. Where's
the Catholic donors?
No, they're donating. What do you mean? Void Zero is one of our biggest value contributors. Mega Catholic. He's a meta Catholic. Okay. Well, let me see if I can change your mood with this. Sports ball, a little sports ball.
And?
You were in the news. You don't tell me you're not watching the playoffs.
Yeah, what playoffs? Basketball?
The hockey league, man.
Oh, no, I haven't been following the hockey
game. Capitals versus the Canadiens? Come on,
yeah, there's
man.
A guy named Dvorak on the Capitals.
From a capacity crowd, first time they've had a fully attended playoff game here since 2017. Young upstart Montreal Canadiens team. Last team in the postseason as they score! Dvorak! Woo! Christian Dvorak finds a way!
Dvorak!
Restores the Canadiens lead!
Dvorak finds a way! Come on, tell me you know this guy. Do you see him at the big Dvorak conference?
No, I didn't see him at the Dvorak conference, but every time I hear about the Capitals, I keep thinking, well, I should get a hold. You know, I know the owner of the team.
Really? Wait, isn't that the guy from AOL, Ted? Ted Leonsis?
Ted Leonsis.
Yeah, I know Ted.
Yeah, everyone knows Ted.
Well, you know, Ted was on our board at a pod show for like 5 minutes.
That sounds like Ted.
He was on the board, showed up to one meeting and went, nah, screw these guys. I'm off. Got no time to be on the board. Yeah, Ted Leonsis, funny guy. Very funny guy.
He is a funny guy. I guess you get a hold of him.
Yeah.
So I can get
if he can be on our board.
Actually, what I want to do is get an autograph of the guy, one of the players is not Dvorak, but this Ovechkin guy. That's a player. Well, that didn't cheer me up.
Well, I'm sorry. Okay, well, let me see if this cheers you up.
Tonight, one of Jeffrey Epstein's most vocal accusers has died. Virginia Giuffre.
Oh, there's a cheery story.
Here with her family, helped to expose Epstein's evil. CBS's Allie Bauman joins us with more tonight. Allie?
Good evening, David. Virginia Giuffre's family calls her a fierce warrior in the fight against sexual abuse. And other survivors have credited her with giving them the courage to speak out. She died Friday at her farm in Australia.
Virginia Giuffre was the first accuser of convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein to waive her anonymity and go public. In a statement, her family says the 41-year-old was the light that lifted so many survivors. In the end, the toll of abuse is so heavy that it became unbearable for Virginia to handle its weight. Giuffre said in 2019, Epstein's sex trafficking ring passed her around like a platter of fruit to the rich and powerful, including Britain's Prince Andrew when she was 17. The Duke of York denies the allegations and questioned the authenticity of this infamous photo of him with AI. His arm around Giuffre's waist. AI. They settled out of court for an undisclosed amount in 2022.
We need to show the world that the rich and the mighty can fall too.
Giuffre spoke with Gayle King in 2020 about her fight for justice and Epstein's death by suicide in a New York jail.
It would have been great to look at him in court and say, you know, you hurt me, you took away my innocence, you took away my youth, but he took that away from us too.
So they didn't really, they buried the lead, if not explained at all, because the real story is, I have two parts here, is that she committed suicide.
The woman who was one of the most prominent accusers of wealthy sex offender Jeffrey Epstein has died. Virginia Giuffre was 41 years old. Her family says she died by suicide.
So this is a very strange story because I have a clip that I clipped, I think, 3 weeks ago. There's a lot of clips we don't get to in the show. And
tons.
Yeah, and it was an oddball story about her. So this is 3 weeks ago where she went on Instagram. She's like, oh, I've been hit by a bus.
There a couple of things before you play that. There's some very interesting, for people who like this sort of thing, conspiracy videos floating around saying that she was murdered. And it's a very, it's kind of fascinating because they say the bus accident, which they've shown, didn't account for her actual bruising, that she was being beaten by some lover of hers that was a sadist, I guess, and beating the crap out of her constantly. And so the pictures you saw of her all beat up was like not, had nothing to do with the bus wreck.
That
and
correct.
Then he hung her.
Ooh, I didn't hear that part. Well, here's the report that I clipped 3 weeks ago.
Police in Australia appear to have disputed a claim made by Prince Andrew's accuser, Virginia Giuffre, that she was involved in a serious crash, which has left her with just days to live. The 41-year-old, who previously alleged that the Duke of York had sexually assaulted her when she was a teenager, wrote on Instagram yesterday that her car had collided with a school bus. Well, Lady Pitt is here. There are some conflicting details in this, aren't there?
Yes, it's a bit confusing, Mary, because in her post online, Virginia Giuffre said that she's gone into kidney renal failure and is being transferred to a specialist urology hospital. And she's posted a photo where she appears to be in a hospital bed and has quite severe bruising to her face. She goes on to say that she has 4 days to live after a crash with the school bus near to her home in Perth in Australia. Now, Western Australia police explained they know of a minor crash between a school bus and a car that was reported by the bus driver the following day, but there were no reported injuries to them as a result of the crash. Here's what the officers have said.
I do know there was an accident on the 24th of March. It was a bus with another vehicle.
And was there any passengers on the bus at the time? Are you aware?
I'm not aware of passengers on the bus, but certainly the bus driver reported it as he was required to do and in the right time frames. And I'm advised it was about $2,000 damage in the vehicle. Not aware of any injuries.
So there's another option, which is she's gone underground because Pam Bondi's about to drop the Epstein report.
Well, if she's already out front about all that, I can't see that being part of it.
I'm just saying this.
I think my thesis about the sadist is more likely.
Mm.
Oh, well, it's not my thesis.
No. But where is the Epstein report? That would be the big question. Where is the Epstein report?
Maybe I guess the third possibility. She hung herself because she's tired of waiting.
Wow. Oh, that's pretty bad. Bad.
Yeah. We're never going to see the Epstein report.
I don't think so either.
We have to get that out of our craw.
I don't think we're going to see
any. I don't think there is a report. I think whatever it is has been burned with everything else, and Epstein's probably still alive.
There you go. Yep.
All right. Well, that didn't. I hardly call that a cheerful.
Well, I was just trying
diversion.
To
diversion. I got some stuff. I know how to cheer me up.
Oh, TikTok. No. TikTok clips. Oh, please.
Yeah. Talk.
TikTok.
All right.
Two TikTok. I have two.
Okay.
And the first one is this guy. It looks exactly like Governor Newsom, only he's got gray hair.
Uh-huh.
And he sounds like Newsom. And I reposted this on Twitter and actually tagged Newsom. Because
I'm gonna tag him. That'll show
him.
I'm tagging Newsom. That'll show him. Look at me. I'm the real Dvorak.
Well, he does follow me, so it has some meaning.
You've got great followers.
Name dropping.
Yes.
And so, but this guy looks exactly like him, and he's a little more manic. But I just got the biggest kick at it. But this is typical of these guys, and he's wearing a suit and tie, and he's. Look, just a screwball clip.
Donald Trump is now arresting a federal judge who disagrees with his immigration policy. Not only is this illegal, but it's happening at the same time that Donald Trump is defying a 9-0 court order. The law. It is at the same time that he's disappearing people without due process, a violation of the Constitution, a violation of the law. Make no mistake, Donald Trump is breaking the law. At the same time that he's breaking the law further by arresting federal judges, this is complete and utter meltdown of the checks and balances to protect us from being an authoritarian regime. Now is the time, America, To be honest, of course, the time was a month ago, 2 months ago, 3 months ago, last November. But now, if you are not feeling with fervor the desire to defend your country, to defend the promise of what you can be, then you are no longer part of this American experiment. Call your senators, call your reps, knock on their doors at their offices, and only one word should be on our lips: impeach!
Oh, man.
That's pretty typical.
Yeah, that's a typical for a Saturday afternoon in your office.
It's just like, wow. Now, the other one I have, which I think is quite funny, and I don't know, you know, I'm in between. I if I'm being logical about this, this is just a troll, and this was at an AOC town hall.
What? Trolls on TikTok? What?
This is at an AOC town hall. It's a question and answer. And this woman comes up and she goes on about her thesis about overpopulation and what we should be doing about it to save the planet for climate change. Mm. And there's a note of sincerity in her voice. She's either, I don't know if she has me convinced if she's a good actress or what, but it's a total troll. It has to be. But Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez doesn't call her out as such, and she just kind of goes along with it, which is pathetic, I might add, but here it is.
We're going to be here for much longer because of the climate crisis. We only have a few months left.
Nah, troll. Right there. Troll.
So you support the Green Deal, but it's not getting rid of fossil fuel. It's not going to solve the problem fast enough. A Swedish professor saying, you know, we can eat dead people, but that's not fast enough. So I think your next campaign slogan has to be this. We got to start eating babies. We don't have enough time. There's too much CO2.
Really? Now, you were questioning if this was troll?
All of you, you're pollutant.
Eat too much babies.
CO2. We have to start now, please. You are so great. I'm so happy that you're really supporting the Green Deal. But
is this the real Alex Stein dressed up with a voice changer?
No, it's just some random Swedish woman.
Not enough. You know, even if we would bomb Russia, we still have too many people, too much pollution. So we have to get rid of the babies. That's a big problem. Just stopping having babies is not enough. We need to eat the babies. And this is very serious. Please give a response.
Thank you. No, thank you. Thank you. We'll go ahead. Okay. No, we'll go ahead. It's so, no. Yeah, no. Thank you. So I think, yeah, no. So one of the things that's very important to us is that we need to treat the climate crisis with the urgency that it does present. Luckily, we have more than a few months. We do need to hit net zero in several years. But I think we all need to understand that there are a lot of solutions that we have and that we can pursue, and that if we act in a positive way, there's space for hope. We are never beyond hope.
Now, hold on a second. I went searching for a clip because I know that we had eating the babies at some point in the history of the show. 2019. Is this the same?
I'm going to be here for much longer.
It is. That's an old clip.
It's not from C-SPAN.
Because of the climate crisis.
That's from 2019.
Well, you think my memory would be a little better that I can remember that clip. Was it mine? And it was taken from C-SPAN, by the way. It wasn't really a TikTok clip. I just call everything talk because it's easier to categorize.
One of your clips, yeah. I'm not calling out for that reason. I'm surprised.
Well, I don't remember us playing it.
I remembered. Okay. Well,
although I have to say, if that clip existed and I submitted it, it was definitely played. Nobody wants to play eating the babies.
I'm sure it was played. That's why I remember. Like, wait, I remember eating that. But I didn't realize it was the exact same clip. In fact, it's the same length. 150. Interesting. Well, this is why the internet sucks.
Well, this
sucks.
Is what bothers me, by the way. This recycling of clips.
Oh, I see it so often. It sucks.
It's just all over. It's all over. In fact, there's a couple of clips that I saw that I lost track of. And then they, you know, like from about a year ago, and boop, there they are again. They're coming back around.
So basically, it wasn't AOC getting trolled. You got trolled with another clip, with an old clip.
I got trolled with an old clip, but it's a great clip.
No, it's a great clip. It's a great clip. But this
I should have just put classic on there.
I mean, sometimes I wonder if we're doing a disservice because, you know, the show started off in 2008, but 2008, Ron Paul was running. He had End the Fed. He had his book out and everybody was talking about, you know, the Federal Reserve, it's this Federalist, Federal Express, and everyone kind of understood that this was not a government agency. And now that Ian Carroll dude, he's made a whole video like, did you know that the Federal Reserve is as governmental as Federal Express? And people are sending it to me like, this is a good backgrounder. You need to watch this. You need to know that the Federal Reserve is not part of the government. And I'm thinking to myself, do we need to re-explain these things? Is that where we're at now?
A number of people out there that have condemned. I forgot who it was. Somebody sent us a note going on and on about how we have basically taken for granted many of these issues with the audience, expecting them to know
that's
stuff.
That's possible. It's possible. I think it's possible. Maybe we should just start re-airing old shows.
I think we could get away with it. You can start with the baby clip. Just find that show and see what else was on there. There's probably some gems.
For every time that the word Obama shows up, like, oh, but Trump, just insert that real quick, and that'll be the same show. Nothing's changed.
Eating the baby. Well, I'm glad you remembered that.
So here is some delusional D.C. Union Dems. This is beautiful. This is a toe tapper. You talk about tapping somebody along. This is your toe tapper. They're so mad at Doge, so mad at Musk, that they made a song about it. And it's kind of a Negro spiritual when you listen to it.
Oh, which side are you on?
Hey now, which side are you on?
Feel free to sing along.
Which side are you on?
That's an old Union song from the 30s.
Oh, it's a Union. It's a commie Union song?
Yeah, that's a classic.
Oh, only you would know that.
I do know it.
What side is that's a Union song?
Yeah, which side are you on? It was I think it goes back into the 30s.
Well, I'll play this and I'll look up the original one.
We'll fight against Josh. We'll fight Elon Musk. No England's kept within our walls. We'll fight from dawn to dusk.
Oh, which side are you on? Which side are you on?
Yeah, it's got this. It's really old-fashioned.
Here it is. It's the American Socialist song. Here we go. Bum, bum, bum. With a banjo, apparently, from the Combined Socialist States of America. 1938. I'm trying to talk up the intro. It's taking a long time. Come on, sing.
Okay,
now here it comes.
Banjo, so he's milking it.
From all of you good workers, good news to you I'll tell.
So they're doing a socialist song.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Side are you on?
Which side are you on?
Yeah, it's an old socialist song from the.
Wow. So a bunch of commies.
Hello.
Oh man, that's crazy. If anyone wants to make end of show mix, I'll put the whole thing in the show notes. I was just like, and they did a whole new lyrics to it. It's like, oh brother, give me a break.
So here's another interesting thing that took place. So Caroline Leavitt, which I discussed in the newsletter with some interesting information, because there's been some phony baloney YouTube videos about her.
Oh, they're going after her personally now? They're going after her personally? Is that
no? It's just the opposite.
Oh,
they're it's like a reverse smear. Is the way I described it. Mm. They're making her sound like some sort of a genius, and she just sued The View, and she got $800 million.
What?
And it was all elaborate. It's all like, you go check the newsletter. There's a link to the video. And so I checked it. I'm like, how come I haven't heard of this? Because I'm watching it, being hook, line, and sinkered.
Mm-hmm.
And after watching another video about her where she excoriated the Supreme Court under some circumstance, which which I eventually found the disclaimer for it on the YouTube video by clicking more. It said, this is fiction.
Oh.
There's no fiction on the $800 million lawsuit story, which is very well produced, and you'd be convinced.
What was it for? What was the $800 million for?
Defamation.
Wow.
Because they brought her on the show, and they slammed her and made fun of her, and they found all these memos.
She won this suit? $800 million?
No, this is the point.
Oh, okay.
It's an elaborate hoax, but it's so elaborate.
Oh, wow.
That it's like you see this, you watch the video, and you are totally convinced that this actually took place. It's very well done. I mean, the video's got clips from different people on Fox talking about how this is going down, and well, it looks like she got an apology, but she's not. And but they clip it so beautifully. It's one of the great pieces of propaganda I've ever seen in my life. So I look at, wow. I believed it because I saw it just casually.
Yes.
And so I said, I've never heard of this. $800 million is not chicken feed.
No, that's almost and a billion.
So it's like, where's the news on this? There's nothing in the New York Times, nothing in the Washington Post.
They had you going.
They had me going for a few minutes, but then I ran it through AI searches.
Oh, goodness.
And I ran it through all of them. I ran it through Grok, spotted it as a hoax. ChatGPT, everything, but spotted it as a hoax. But Perplexity, which is one of my go-tos, perplexity.ai, they bought it.
Wow.
And so I saw the thing about she won this $800 million lawsuit. And then I looked at they have reference buttons you push, and you see what the references are.
Mm-hmm.
And there were two references, both of the same fake YouTube video.
Oh, yeah.
That I guess they scanned, and I don't know how they managed to get it in there, but they did it.
What? AI was wrong? Say it ain't so.
So I'm using this as an example of AI, you know, can't even do the fact checking for you. But so this kind of thing's been going on. So, but anyway, that's the aside. Carolyn Leavitt has made it so you have a couple of podcasters can now,
yes.
they have a podcasting seat.
Oh, it's a new media. I think it's the new media seat.
New media seat. And there's a seat in front, and then there's some bunch of them in the back. But the seat in front was now occupied for this one day by Tim Pool, buddy.
When you're in the new media seat, do you have to wear the dunce cap? Is that the idea? You sit there in the corner with the big
over point. Over to the side wearing his beanie.
Big pointy hat. Oh, with his beanie. Okay. And he's sitting there with his beanie.
I don't know if you saw this or
no,
not.
No, I did not. I knew he was. Okay. I knew about it.
This is the clip from it. How long does this clip go for?
142.
Yeah, it's 142. It's about 140. Yeah. It's a scripted to such an embarrassing extreme that she should be ashamed of herself because this is unbelievable. They're going to use this new media seat to slam the mainstream media with tropes. And she's going to respond, oh, you made such a good point.
Ah!
Yeah, this is terrible. You're right.
How does the phone call go? Hello, Tim Pool. This is the White House press office. We're sending you a script. We have decided that you are going to be in the new media seat. Now, since you have a beanie, you don't have to wear the dunce cap, but we will be sending you a script, and we expect you to read it. Is that okay?
Oh, yeah.
And here's the clip.
Many of these organizations that are represented in this room have marched in lockstep.
That right there is written by the White House press office. That is a Carolyn Leavitt line. Many of the organizations represented in this room.
Yeah.
Right off the bat, you can hear it's a script.
Many of these organizations that are represented in this room have marched in lockstep on false narratives, such as the Very Fine People hoax, the Covington smear, and now what's being called the Maryland Man hoax.
Did she have his hand up her hand up his butt and moving his mouth? I mean, this is unbelievable.
Where an MS-13 gang member adjudicated by two different judges, I believe, is just simply being referred to as a Maryland Man over and over again. Now, in an effort from the White House to expand access to new companies, you've created this new media seat. So I'm wondering if you can comment on, following this expansion, you've had numerous outlets disparage the companies that you've had sit here, as well as the reporters. I'm wondering if you can comment on the unprofessional behavior, as well as elaborate if there's any plans to expand access to new companies.
You're behaving very unprofessionally towards me. I am Pool Boy.
Sure. Well, sure. We certainly welcome diverse viewpoints in this room, which is one of the reasons we have you in here. And there's many new faces in this room in comparison to the previous administrations. We want to welcome all viewpoints into this room. We welcome unbiased journalists who really care about the truth and the facts and the accuracy. And you rightfully pointed out the Marilyn Mann story, which I, from this podium, when The Atlantic published it on that very first day, I came to this podium and said, this is wrong. The press in this room have this story wrong. And we have seen more and more evidence come to the table that we have had all along. We were always right. The president was always on the right side of this issue to deport this illegal criminal from our community. And it is despicable to see the media continue to refer to this individual as someone who is just a peaceful man living his life in Maryland. This was and always has been an illegal criminal, an MS-13 gang member, and a designated foreign terrorist. And the administration maintains our position to deport these individuals from our community. So thank you for being here, Tim.
It's great
to see you. Thank you.
Oh, man. How pathetic. And, you know, if she says one more time, from this podium, well, I'm going to start using that. Here at my podcast podium. John, are you at your podium? What do you think about it from your podium?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I recorded it. Last night, we had the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Also known
as... Well, I'm glad, you know, that I saw it mentioned and I was going to go check it out because I just completely dropped the ball, so I'm glad you picked it up.
Well, I just picked up a little bit of it because, you know, and I, what's the most fun is watching, it's called the Nerd Ball. The most fun is watching the people come in and C-SPAN, they, in essence, just turn the camera on. They have their girl there who has a microphone and she's just grabbing people. Of course, there was no comedian. They fired the comedian. There was no president. And there were almost no celebrities, which was the whole point of the fun of the White House Correspondents' Dinner. It was fun to watch because the comedian would roast the president and the president would sit there and take it. And, you know, it was that moment in time, which is gone. Gone forever.
Yeah.
And so they had what do they have to do? Well, then everyone else is the star. So you had all of the news anchors showing up. And then I saw Dana Bash with, what's the man, woman? What's her name? Caitlin? Caitlin Collins?
Caitlin Jenner?
No. Caitlin Collins.
Caitlin Collins, the lipless wonder.
Yeah, the lipless wonder. And they are primping and posing for the camera and shimmying their shoulders and laughing and doing
shimmying their shoulders.
I was my mouth was agape. I'm like, oh my gosh, they're the stars, they're the celebrities.
As you all know.
And then we have this guy.
We invite the president to this dinner. For decades, presidents on both sides of the political spectrum get gussied up and join us.
Have you seen this guy, the new president of the White House Correspondents Association?
It sounds a lot like what's his name, the black guy from Capehart.
Well, he might be his brother, but he's in a complete white suit instead of a tie, he's got like a pearl brooch. And he looks
what?
With a pearl brooch, you know, like a brooch.
Is he gay? He sounds it.
Hello.
I want to be clear about something. We don't invite presidents of the United States to this because it's for them. We don't invite them because we want to cozy up to them or curry favor.
Sure sounds like Kate. We don't. Hard.
You got to look at this guy. His name is Eugene.
I'm looking it up now.
Eugene Daniels. He looks like he walked right
out. What's his name?
Eugene Daniels. He looks like he walked straight out of an El DeBarge video. I mean, it's like...
That's a little obscure.
Not for
this guy.
Not for people who were around in the 80s.
Only extend invites to the presidents who say they love journalists or who say they are defenders of the First Amendment and a free press. We invite them to remind them that they should be. We invite them to demonstrate that those of us who have chosen the public service of journalism aren't...
The public service of journalism... It's a job.
Doing it because we love flights on Air Force One or walking into the Oval Office.
Yeah, you do.
It's to remind them why a strong Fourth Estate is essential for democracy.
That's why we have podcasters. A smattering of applause.
Well, here he is. Here's a picture of him in this outfit you're talking about. So he's wearing, it's in Variety.
Of course. Hey, everybody. I made Variety. These people feel like they are stars. And they're pontificating like, this is public service. Who are you sitting with? Who are you sitting with? Well, I'm sitting with a bunch of guys from AP and CNN. There's no celebrities. I got no one there.
So this guy's the MSNBC guy, and he's obviously in the same milieu as Capehart because he sounds so much like him.
Oh, totally.
Why, at the end of the day, it's good for them. Even among the most...
Huh? You know, if you played this guy out of the blue and I had to guess who it was...
You would have said Capehart. You would have said Capehart. No?
Yeah.
Free Nations, the WHCA, what we do is unique.
Yeah, I'll
it say. Is an example of American exceptionalism.
Oh.
Though we don't have the current president with us.
This is
like more an example of douchebaggery.
This is what I'm talking about.
Tonight, we wanted to hear from some of those who have been gracious enough to sit among the White House press corps.
And here we go. Roll the tape.
Members of the White House Correspondents Association, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, here I am.
Who was that from Saturday Night Live who did Bush? Because
you're thinking of Dana Carvey who used to do George W.
Yeah, this
H.W. Bush.
No, this is W.
Ain't gonna.
Yeah. Well, so then they played the clip of that when it was cool when you had people making fun of the president and the president making fun of himself. But they jumped that shark so long ago. Anyway, it's just like it was.
They jumped the shark when Obama went after Trump.
Trump, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's right.
And then everybody else went after Trump.
Yeah,
and that was the end of it.
Yeah, I didn't pull that clip.
Trump's funny, but he can't take a joke when it's just mean spirited. Kind of a. I think he's got a sense of humor. Could take some chiding. But not when it's the way it was with Obama.
Yeah. It was Obama. I don't think I clipped that. Here it is. The imagine if I did any of this clip. Here we go.
Imagine if I had done any of this. Let me just, I just want to be clear about it.
There's a lot of his, he does a lot of that in this clip. I miss him.
Imagine that. Imagine if I had pulled Fox News' credentials from the White House press corps. You're laughing, but no, this is what's happening. Imagine if I'd said to law firms that were representing parties that were upset with policies my administration had initiated that you will not be allowed into government buildings.
I don't think that happened, did it?
Not that I know of. Yeah, government buildings. It was a CIA skiff.
This is from the Midas Touch Network. I'm still a fan. Come on.
We will punish you economically for dissenting from the Affordable Care Act.
What? Oh, is he talking? What is he talking about?
I have no idea what he's talking
about. Or the Iran deal.
The Iran deal, huh?
We will ferret out students.
Students. Spooks.
Who protest against my policies.
Anyway, genius. I didn't know where this was. When did he do that? We can't believe he can still pack a house. People that, Obama wasn't that bad, man. It's not as bad as this was. The mainstream, the M5M, is pretty much all they're doing now is polls. Oh, the country hates what Trump's doing. 22%. No one agrees. No one likes it. But the best this week came from the Supreme Court. And this was a, this is Mammoet versus V. Taylor. This is about a Montgomery school district. So Montgomery is in, is that Virginia, Montgomery? I think it's Montgomery.
No, this is Maryland.
Maryland, yes, thank you. About the LGBTQ books in school.
Yeah, for the for the kindergartners, they got to have the gay dog book, and then there was all these other S&M books and leather.
Yes, yeah, so I pulled two
clips. It's very funny stuff.
Well, it'd be funny if it wasn't so pathetic. I mean, it's just, I mean, and the defense. So here's Supreme Court Justice Gorsuch. First, he's getting the details on these books. Now, this is just not the books in the library. This is being taught as part of the English curriculum.
What age do you, in Montgomery County, teach students normally about human sexuality?
I think that it begins in either fourth or fifth grade.
The human sexuality class.
The family life and human sexuality curriculum.
Okay.
I'm not entirely sure.
Starts in fourth or fifth grade, you
think?
Is there anything you can point us to in the record on that?
I don't think so.
Okay. And second, these books are being used in English class.
Wow, you know what he sounds a bit like? When he starts, let's start this off.
What age do you, in Montgomery County, teach students normally about human sexuality?
Tell me about your sexuality. It's in your DNA.
Man, Charlie Rose and Judge Nailed Gorsuch, it. Same guy.
What age do you, in Montgomery County, teach students normally about human sexuality?
I think that it begins in either fourth or fifth grade.
The human sexuality class.
The family life and human sexuality curriculum.
Okay.
I'm not entirely sure.
Starts in fourth or fifth grade, you
think? So.
Is there anything you can point us to in the record on that?
I don't think so.
Okay. And second, these books are being used in English class.
The division between English class and other things in a second grade classroom doesn't really exist. You're sort of in a room with a teacher and somebody.
No, I appreciate that. I went to second grade too.
Yeah.
But it's part of the English curriculum that these books are being used in. That's I thought that was.
Yeah, I'm not fighting the premise. I'm just saying that
it's not the math class.
It's not
the human sexuality class. It is
certainly not
class.
The human sexuality class. Yeah. I'm just sort of fighting the premise that there's a neat distinction.
Okay. And they're being used in English language instruction at age three. Some of them.
So Pride Puppy was the book that was used for the pre-kindergarten curriculum. That's
Pride Puppy. Pride Puppy.
No longer in the curriculum.
That's the one where
by the way, this is unconscionable.
No kidding.
They would introduce 3 years pre-kindergartner kids to Pride Puppy and some of these other things. This is, it never got brought up in any of the conversations that I think they've banned the term, but this is pure grooming.
Completely.
It's grooming, grooming, grooming. And who are these people trying to kid?
Some of them.
So Pride Puppy was the book that was used for the pre-kindergarten curriculum. That's no longer in the curriculum.
That's the one where they are supposed to look for the leather and things and bondage, things like that.
It's not bondage. It's a woman in a leather.
Sex worker, right?
No.
No?
That's not correct. No.
I read it.
I love, that's my favorite. Gosh, I read it. I saw it as bondage. I mean, I might have to reevaluate my thoughts.
Drag queen.
The leather that they're pointing to is a woman in a leather jacket. And one of the words is drag queen in the search.
And they're supposed to look for those.
It is an option at the end of the book, correct?
Yeah, okay.
So this goes on. And by the way, they brought in comparisons to religion, which was very, really confused the whole conversation. But
I'm glad you got these clips.
Yeah, I mean, actually it was Rob, the constitutional lawyer, who sent them to me. He says, this is some good, he said, this is show material.
Yeah, you know, I saw almost all the stuff because it was fascinating. It's hard not to listen to it. And I don't know why I didn't clip it, but it's definitely important because it's insane.
Well, and here's the part that is even more insane.
You've included these in the English language curriculum rather than the human sexuality curriculum to influence students. Is that fair? That's what the district court found.
So the key word, influence, to influence students.
I think that? To the extent the district court found that it was to influence them towards civility.
Influence them towards civility.
The natural consequence of being exposed.
Whatever, but to influence them.
In the manner that I just mentioned, yes.
Okay. So that right there is enough. You are not in school to influence children, are you? I mean, influence here is just another
nowadays,
term
yes.
for propagandize.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, you want your teacher to be a good influence, but that's a different use of the verb influence. This is to propagandize children. It's really, this is homeschool, people, homeschool.
And responding to parents who are concerned, you agree that there was some intemperate language used.
Yeah, so, and this is why it's Mahmoud versus Taylor. So it was the Muslims who said, hey, stop this nonsense. They're the ones that stood up. And so I guess there was a temperative atmosphere at the school board where people may have gotten a little bit heated. And then this guy said something which, you know, I didn't quite mean it, whatever.
I don't know that those were responding to parents who were concerned. This was after the fact for most of these comments. And this was in a very public setting, which obviously got heated and some intemperate comments were used, certainly. Yeah.
And I wanted to understand your context that you were giving about the statement that some Muslim families, it's unfortunate that this issue put some Muslim families on the same side of an issue as white supremacists and outright bigots. I think in response to Justice Sotomayor, you're trying to give some context to that?
I don't think I was speaking directly about that comment. I think that comment was given or was made in June, which was several months after the decision to withdraw the opt-outs was made. I don't have context for that statement, no.
Oh, I don't have context. We understand the context. You're telling these Muslim parents that just like these white supremacist Nazis. This has to stop. I can't even believe that the judges had such decorum during this whole hearing. It's really, and this goes far beyond just a couple of books in the library. They are influencing children. Yes, I wonder if, is it a synonym? Grooming, synonym, influence. Let's see. 38 similar words. Doesn't show up, but it does in my dictionary. This is really nuts.
Yeah, the whole thing was quite good. And then Ketanji Jackson Brown,
yeah, I missed
she kind of took the side of the school district.
Well,
saying,
of course.
Well, you know, yeah. If you don't like it, go someplace else.
Yeah.
Well, then she introduced the idea of school choice.
Yes.
Of course, her final thing was homeschool. She did say that.
No, that's the final answer. Obviously, I got a note from one of our producers.
But it is the final answer, except for the fact that we're being taxed to death for the educational system, and we should be able to use it. We should be able to send the kids to a private public school, and it should be fine. So they should learn how to read, write, and do math.
Yeah,
but no. They're being taught about gay dogs. I mean, it's just beyond me.
Pride Puppy is not a gay dog. Just search for the woman in leather. Boots on the Ground, Peer Network for Mental Health Disorders Among Kids, from one of our producers. Just pulled the kids from public school. Why?
Why?
Because of a cultural issue based in our rural schools that was persistently spreading amongst the children. We are privy to more knowledge because my wife worked for the school as well. There was a chronically online, over-socialized seventh grader who determined she was a Therian. You know what a Therian is? I didn't even know what a Therian is.
A Therian? Wow, that's a new one to me, too.
Kids who identify as an animal.
Oh, furry.
Yeah, well, Therian. Within 3 months, she had convinced almost 70% of the girls of this small school that they also identified as animals. I see.
Yeah, the social, that's what the social contagion.
I say convinced because she predatorily targeted the younger children to gain more self-assurance in her position. Children as young as 4 years old were asking their parents to buy them tails and masks to go to school in. It worked its way back up the classes. The data from the school shows it was mostly all girls from 4 to 14 and only a couple of mentally unstable boys. There's no bias here with our producer. The school refused to... well, you know.
Yeah, a couple of guys. Let me think I'd get in on this action.
Hey, all the chicks are wearing tails. I'm in. The school refused to acknowledge what was happening and do anything about it. So I agree. It's 100% the peer network, social networks, including YouTube and the internet. Our children started coming home and using language and saying they are identifying as a cat or a dog, and then we have to have some long conversations about it and its dangers and what it really meant. They got the idea, to understand the severity of identify and went to school to declare that they were mistaken, but would love to play as a dog or cat, etc. That was our compromise. Well, that's a big compromise.
Not much of one.
We ultimately decided to pull the kids halfway through the year to homeschool. Parents who did not pull their kids are reporting their kids are more and more adamant about it, defying them, fighting with them, trying to pursue their Therian self.
Biting them.
biting their ankles. Other parents are starting to try and buy these children the tails and garb that they need to fully identify as said animal in defiance of these.
This is a great note.
Showing that it takes one parent, one kid, and school scared off a lawsuit over this woke language to really ruin a school district. So I guess that they, it was getting, this is not okay. And good for you, anonymous producer parent. Good for you. Although I wouldn't have even gone with the compromise.
No.
Forget that.
Can't put up with that crap.
Yeah. This is what's happening. The internet killing everybody slowly. Oh, goodness.
Well, it doesn't have to.
No, it doesn't have to. Al Gore was on Bill Maher Friday.
Yeah, I saw that. You know, what I wanted to get, I didn't get a clip from that.
But I did.
I'm glad you did. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a clip I wanted to get, this was another one of these I didn't clip. I have a million clips, but I don't clip everything.
You don't clip them. I got all these clips that I didn't clip because,
you know. No, I got clips that I didn't clip. I got a lot of clips that I did clip.
You got up on the wrong side of the bed. You know, that's what happened.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah. But I wanted to get Steve Bannon when he was on.
Yeah.
I think the week before. And Bannon is the one who claims that he's the one who started the Trump 2028 idea.
Oh, really?
Yes, he says he started it, and it was, and they're looking into it, and he says they think they can legally do it, and he wants to do it, and he went on and on and on. So the whole thing's a Bannon scam.
Clearly.
Bannon is the most arrogant character. He's just,
But President Trump unveiled it in the Oval Office to Frau Ingraham. He said, come here, take a look at this.
You're talking about the hat?
Yeah.
Yeah, the hat, which I think Eric or Don Jr. did. I don't know who did the hat. But he didn't say, but he never said he was going to, he thought it was, he never actually stated that he's going to do it. He beats around the bush.
No, of course not. The sad thing is.
Because he knows he's not going to do it. It's just bull crap. But Bannon's taking it very, unlike us and every other observer who thinks that Trump's a goof. And he likes to do these kinds of things. Bannon's taking it very seriously.
Well, let me paraphrase from the text group here in Fredericksburg, Texas, Hill Country. Look at this. The libs are losing their minds. And it could, constitutionally, it can be done.
Yep. That's what Bannon says.
Yeah, well, that's what they're...
It's very clear that it can't be done.
It's Well, you should tell Buzzkill Jr. that, because he's all... This is just another version...
Care. I got the money in the bank, the way I see it.
This is just another version of martial law. It's
another version of martial law. It's another version of the grid going down. It's another version of micro dots.
It's going... Okay, you didn't have to hurt me. You didn't have to pull me in. I've already repented for all that.
I'm not condemning you.
And 10 Days of Darkness.
I forgot about that one.
And then when we come back after 10 Days of Darkness, everything is going to be a great reset. everything will be different and we'll all be billionaires because we bought XRP. I'm telling you, the XRP thing is still in play.
Oh, I forgot about the XRP thing.
It, you know, with the quantum off-world servers. Yes. There were people who were so...
You're right in the dead center of this. I really think that's great.
I love it. And the thing is, I can laugh with these people about it. And like, did you buy any more XRP? Just like, yeah, it's going to 2,000, I hear. If it go, I have 1,000 XRP that I bought at like 5 cents.
And sounds about right.
I didn't even realize I had it until I looked at an old one. I'm like, oh, I got this. And got some XLM too. And they're like, it's going to 2,000. If it goes to 2,000, I'm buying you a car because I will have $2 million. Not you, John. I keep telling them. Oh, yeah.
What about me?
No, you're not getting a car. No. So anyway, here is Al Gore on Bill Maher. And here he is responding to the speech that he gave, which we pulled apart on the last episode of the best podcast in the universe.
We generally have the same view of the Trump administration.
Yeah.
You were in the news this week for invoking Nazis.
Well, I didn't do what J.D. Vance did and call Trump America's Hitler when he did that a few years ago. I
think there's what he actually said was, I think about Trump a lot, and he could be an asshole just like Nixon, or he could be America's Hitler.
I remember thinking,
oh, so the good option?
I like how Bill Maher is defending with facts.
Is that he's just an asshole like Nixon.
Well... But I think there's a big difference in comparing someone to Hitler.
We heard the clip. He compared him to Hitler. I was talking about the Frankfurt School.
On the one hand, which I don't do. I think that's a big mistake. And I said that in the speech that you're referring to. That's a unique form of evil that should not ever be compared to anything. But we are not living up to our responsibility to our Constitution if we don't remain alert to warning signs that we know from history, not only from the Third Reich, but from a whole series of strongman dictators. When they start trying to tell people what to think, when they start trying to expand their power so that they push the Congress around, push the judiciary around, and try to consolidate dictatorship, the first steps on that road are ones that we should see as warning signs.
And those warning signs are your own facts, your own truth, lies.
Nazi is a hard word to use with nuance.
Yeah.
So when you bring that word out, you know, I feel like they're the goat of evil, you know. And so it just conflates.
I agree with that. But if you look at what I actually said in that speech, there was a group of German philosophers that went back after the war and conducted a kind of moral autopsy. And they said, one of them said that the first step on the descent into hell in that case was, and I quote, the conversion of all questions of truth into questions of power. They attack the distinction between true and false.
Oh.
And when I see and hear over and over again the assertion of complete inaccuracies that Ukraine is responsible for starting the war with Russia, there's so many of them. And they keep asserting these things, expecting us to believe that the climate crisis is a hoax invented by the Chinese, that windmills cause cancer, that coal is clean. And they try to assert with the force of power their own special version of alternative facts.
Yeah, but I guarantee that the side of the country that voted for Trump, they hear Nazi and they just go, oh, you're calling us Nazis?
Mm.
First of all, it's a bit of a false premise, as bad as they are. And also, it just says to them, well, you just hate us.
Bill Maher, he may be part of the saving grace of the country.
I have to do a mea culpa.
Uh-oh.
For the one listener out there has a history or has a background in science, made a point that I made an error.
Uh-oh.
When I was talking about clean coal, I'm glad that you played that clip. Now it reminded me, because I was going to do it, and I forgot all about it, of course, as usual. And it was lignite is the worst coal, not the best coal. The best coal is actually something called anthracite, which is super clean coal. And lignite is the dirty, dirty coal. But even though we can kind of burn it in these floating beds, but I don't know why I said lignite. I know what it is. And it was a blunder on my part. I'm surprised I only got one note from one guy.
Well, we got a lot of notes about Coldwater Creek, about the Manhattan Project waste.
Yes, and there and the notes were all over the map.
Well, we got ones like this. Please revisit the Coldwater Creek nuclear story from show 1758, minute marker 40.02 to 46.20. You and John were clearly lost. First, not knowing about it. That's my favorite. Not knowing about it. Second, saying repeatedly it was in Pennsylvania. And thirdly, dismissing it as simply fear-mongering. Easy does it, people. We're just here at the podcast podium. You can just say, hey, you know, you were wrong. This is what's going on, and there really is something happening there. And a family of mine has indeed, gotten sick from stuff that's probably around here. But no, waste from the U.S. nuclear bomb project was in fact buried in Missouri and is in fact still making people ill today. Also, John, the most inexpensive Geiger counters under $800 will not detect alpha radiation. Oh, my goodness. Mea culpa. I still hold the belief that it was a story that was brought back to fearmonger against nuclear.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I believe that is correct.
Exemplification of that idea is the... Actually, we had another. There's another story somebody pointed out and sent it to you. And I think you may have looked into it, which is a story that had resurfaced two or three or four times over the last 4 or 5 years, which is something you've spotted a lot. And I'd say the baby eating thing is a good example on today's show.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was from 5 years ago.
Yeah. Six?
So, yeah, recycling of memes.
Yes, it happens.
And tropes.
It happens.
So, it's very common. And it's like, well, it was a good say. It worked back there in those days. Let's do it again.
So no sooner had the president signed his AI in school executive order, then we start getting inundated with AI in the schools. So I'd call this propaganda, too, because remember, it was public-private partnerships. So this is about the Abi robot, So the kids are sitting in the Abi lab, and they all have a computer in front of them. The computer has a camera. It's scanning their eyes to see what they're looking at on the screen. And the little cute little robot sits on a shelf. They each have their own little robot. And the robot, his eyes blink. And it's, you remember that dog? Remember the Sony dog?
Aibo.
Thank you. Aibo. This is Abi. I wonder if it's also from Japan. So, yeah. So it's kind of like that, only it's more robot-esque. But it's not much more. It's, it has some, it can move its arms and it swivels its body. But it's doing great for the kids.
It's become like a little mascot.
Meet Abi.
We didn't know what Abi was, but it came with a promise of uplifting our test scores.
The AI program is aimed at kindergarten through fifth graders. It helps both students and teachers in the learning process.
They never complain about coming to Abi Lab. It's like, Ms. Miller, we're going to Abi Lab today? It's like, yes, we're going to the Abi Lab.
The robot uses the camera in the student's computer to track eye movements and their attention span. It helps them stay on track.
We'll actually pause the math or reading lesson, call them out by name, and say, hey, you're not paying attention. Let's make sure we stay focused before we move on to the next problem.
The program uses a student's account to track their progress by subject.
Abi customized the lesson that they're getting, so children feel that at the end of the day that Abi is meeting their needs.
Abi is capable of adapting to students' learning styles and celebrates those who are succeeding. This new frontier may be worrisome to some parents, but creators say Abi won't take the place of teachers. It's an additional tool.
Tools have a place, right? They don't supplant, they don't replace, but they should have a place that helps empower teachers in a way that gives them the ability to do more in their classroom.
And the school is seeing positive results. One teacher says this is accelerating the kids' learning early in the school year.
The one that comes to lab moving up into second grade, EbiLab has really helped them reaching the goals that they need to reach in first grade and starting them with a solid foundation in second grade.
So apparently it's working. It's one of our trolls said, is it like one of those monkeys with the symbols? Yeah, that's kind of what it is. A mechanical version of the monkey with the symbols. Oh, you did a ching, ching, good job.
Monkey with the
ching,
symbols.
Ching, ching, you did a good job. You know, I did some vibe coding over the weekend. Which is
what?
A vibe coding. It's a new word I learned. Vibe coding. Vibe coding is where you program computer code with AI. Vibe coding. Because I have a project. I'm working on this project. And it's the same thing that I talked about last time. It makes a mistake. And then, you know, it's, oh, I see I made a mistake because I give it the error log. And then before you know it, it's like, well, you have to recompile your kernel. I mean, literally, it takes you in circles. It goes around. And then, because I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not a coder. And I want it desperately. Like, help me. It's not a very difficult program. But help me do it. And because I'm not a programmer, I expect the AI. And I said, I'm not a programmer.
And I brought up what JC said about this on a previous show, because you made this complaint before, which is that AI coding is no good if you can't code.
So I want to take, yes, I want to take it a little bit further. Because for me, coding with AI is almost like working with a genius kindergartner who has ADHD and has a box of animal crackers. You know, can't focus. It's all over them. It's nuts. And then I realize we have to apply the Mann-Gelman amnesia thesis to AI.
Remind us what that is.
Mann-Gelman is where you read something in the news. Mann-Gelman amnesia, where you read something in the newspaper about a topic you absolutely are an expert in, and it's wrong. Ergo, you can assume that every other article in the newspaper about things you don't know about is going to be wrong. That's the Mann-Gelman amnesia effect.
Why is it called amnesia, you think?
Because you forget. You're the amnesia part. Because you forget that, hey, they don't know what they're talking about. So when it comes to aviation, you know, it's like, well, they rarely have it right with accidents and all that. Even with what we were talking about earlier, with the phone line. Well, you know, it was a dirty line. It was a commercial, and it didn't have a firewall. Like, okay, sure, yeah, that's what makes a line not dirty is having a firewall. So that's bullcrap. So then we can presume that everything else they say is bullcrap. And by the way, that's probably the same with us too. However, we know a little about a lot.
We know a lot about a little.
Yeah, we do. We know a lot about a little, and a little about a lot.
Yeah, which is better than most people do podcasting who just shoot the shit.
So when it comes to creating podcasts, I would say AI gets a below passing grade. It can't do podcasts. It's always the same thing. Well, let's take a deep dive. So if we know that it cannot properly do podcasting, it probably can't do great coding either. Back to Buzzkill Jr., could I maybe use it for some things in podcasting? Yeah, you can make some ISOs for the end of the show. That's about it.
I have some for today's show.
But first, I'd like to thank you for your courage. Say in the morning to you, the man who put the C in his very own podcast podium. Say hello to my friend on the other end, the one, the only Mr. John C. Oh, shoot. John C. DeVorek!
Wow, and good morning to you, Mr. Adam Curry. In the morning, our ships at sea, baby eaters, boots on the ground, feet in the air, subs in the water, the names and ice out there.
In the morning to the trolls in the troll room. Let's count these trolls for a second. Oh, there we go. We're talking 2,473 trolls peak timage listening at trollroom.io, tuning into the live stream, which is good. And the trolls have been, and the trolls are now all turning into baby eaters. Yeah, it doesn't surprise me. Trolls like eating babies.
So you can join them at trollroom.io, or if you want to, you can listen live on a modern podcast app. Go to podcastapps.com. I like Podcast Guru. That's the one I've been using. Someone just asked me today, which one should I use? Well, you should try them all, I would say. Try them all. There's a cornucopia of podcast apps to use. They have many more features than your Apple or your Spotify or anything else you can find, including the live bat signal, which is for all of the No Agenda live podcasts on No Agenda Stream. I think they pretty much all are using the lit tag is what it's called. Just live. And you'll be notified. So when Darren and Larry go live with Planet Rage, which is typically, I want to say that's, I don't even know what day it is, but it's always right around the time I'm walking the dog and my phone goes like, oh, the boys, it's Planet Rage. And I listen live while I'm walking around. Also, you get chapters, you get transcripts, all kinds of benefits. And
that's interesting, Adam. Where can you find all these podcasts? Is there a compendium or a list of what they are and where they are?
Well, I'm glad you asked, John. I would go to podcastapps.com. That would take you to this entire list that shows you, it's a compendium, and it shows you all of the features they support. It's well worth your time and trouble.
Wow.
Thanks. Thank you. Podcasting 2.0 people, thank you for that. We are value for value, which means we will not get a seat at the new media spot in the in the White House press room.
Chair.
We're not being put on the chair. It's like getting a timeout. Congratulations, you're now in the White House. You're in the timeout spot. But that also means that we rely entirely on the value that you feel you get from what we do and send back to us. That's something we started in our first year, said this is never, we can never do ads. Not because,
I didn't print this out, but we did. Since I sent out the second note, I get a lot of feedback. I try to answer most of it about why the donations are down.
Oh,
and yes. So they all get perked back up enough so that it's not nothing to complain about, but I got the one, my favorite one was one of our producers. It's because you're communists. He says you're asking for money and then you're taking it from us and then you're passing it to yourselves. And he went on and on about it. He says, we're communists. Communist model's no good.
It was described to me yesterday at lunch as God's economy. I thought that was a good one. I like that too. So I don't know about the communist one. No, we just decided early on that, and a lot of people think, well, it's good, you know, because if you had ads, you'd be deplatformed and people would pull their ads. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah, this show would not be existing if we had used another model.
But that's not the prime reason. The prime reason we didn't want ads was we didn't want to have meetings with advertisers.
Well, like, that's your main reason, because you always had to do that.
Hi, I'm the Monkey Boy. Remember me from MTV? What? Nanu Nanu. Waka Waka Waka. Hey, everybody. Headbangers Ball. Yeah, baby. Beavis and Butthead. Now buy some ads. Yeah.
Yeah, who? Right. And then you had then half the money from the ads go to the sales group anyway.
Yeah. And commissions everywhere. And then it's no good.
Yeah, and then they have to be, you need a traffic department to deal with it.
Traffic department.
Yeah.
So instead, we said, you know what, if you get any value from the show, send it back to us. And that was kind of an experiment, and it worked, and people liked it. They liked the idea of supporting us for the value they get. Like even the producer from Horowitz's Drunk Party. It was probably a Florida Key Party, if you ask me. And she said, you know,
what does that mean?
You don't know about
what wife swapping?
Yeah, that's key parties. Yeah, that's a big thing in Florida.
Good days are over.
No, it's hey, I'm telling you. Remember, we had a big group there in Florida, and they disbanded all of a sudden. I think it was a key party gone wrong.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, that's a big disappointment. I forgot what the name of that
the group. Yeah, it was a good group. It was a good group. And no one.
Yeah, they were meeting all the time. It was like Indiana.
Yeah, no one picked it up. Although we do have a meter report for Leo Bravo knocked it out of the park today. He had 20 people at his Los Angeles meetup. People coming down from Washington. It's a nice report. No, so instead we just ask you to contribute back time, talent, treasure. That's the three T's of the value for value model. It's now become a thing. People talk about, oh, I'm value for value. Oh, really? Yeah. Where'd you come up with that? Well, man, it's from the Bitcoiners. Well, I don't think so, but that's all right. It's good.
Yes. More stolen valor.
Valueforvalue.info if you want to learn more about it. Value4value.info. And so people can do all kinds of things. We've had people do many things throughout the ages to support the show. In fact, the reason that you still get no agenda at the top of all your Google searches is because one of our early producers was an SEO expert, and he cemented us inside the algorithms. No agenda is this show when you're looking for it. Also, news with no agenda, I think we pop up at the top of the list. So that was a very valuable contribution back to the show. And of course, another valuable contribution is the artwork that our artists diligently are making during the live show, because they're using that modern podcast app. They get alerted. Oh yeah, that's right. I got to listen. I got to make some art. And then they upload that to noagendaartgenerator.com, another fine website that one of our producers, Sir Paul Couture, has provided and kept running for us mostly for the past 10, 15 years. And the artwork for episode 1758, which we titled Scream Circle, was a fine AI generated piece, which just made us laugh, from Francisco Scaramanga. It was our Black Pope done as a Muppet with the odds of him being the odds of him being chosen 33-1. And it hit home. People loved it. They were laughing their butts off. And when I see on X people say, the minute this popped up, I had to pull over and get the podcast. I had to listen to what was going on. It was very funny. And it's something about the goofball smile, I think, that just makes it work. Yeah, I think
the goofy smile
is really good. Let's see if there's any other things that we looked at that were close seconds.
Not really.
No, I remember, because typically we do the credits.
We liked a few pieces, but none of them were getting the mark.
You liked the watermelon juice from Matthew Dropko.
I thought you liked it.
No, you liked it. You liked it. I was like, kind of simple. The mustache wedding was cute, but we didn't think anyone would really understand that one. It's pretty obscure. Oh, the one that I liked, you put the kibosh on right away, and not without merit, was the two popes doing rock, paper, scissors.
Oh, so you
had the Black Pope and the White Pope, and you're like, that's no good. Look at their hands. It's all AI. It's no good.
Yeah, the one-handed guy's fingers were a mile long, and the other fist couldn't even form a fist. It was terrible.
It's too bad, because the concept was good. The concept was good, but no.
You also liked the mustache wedding. You said that a minute ago, but I'm just looking at it now. No,
I didn't fight you on it. Didn't fight you.
No. The only one you really were. You're right. The one you were really pushing was rock, paper, scissors.
I like the rock, paper, scissors. But we have veto power, and I wasn't going to argue. I mean, sometimes we'll argue over it. Like, well, I can make the case.
We've done deals.
We've done backroom deals. I'll give you 2 weeks of art if you give me this one. Just give me this one, please. I like it. That was about it. That was about it. And it's nice to see there's some real art in there. It's not all AI. There's people doing stuff. We appreciate you. We appreciate all of our artists, especially those who are professional artists who are seeing that this can be a tool. And I guess it's working for them. I mean, just like I remember when
I think a lot of artists like to see if they can crank something out.
Yeah. I'm sure
it's good to do production work once
because
in a while.
It's still the concept. Without the concept, the concept of the two popes was a great concept, but those the two fingers of the White Pope, that was no good. That was too much, and I don't think that was intentional. Go Fox did that. Anyway, thank you very much. We appreciate that. Now, we also like to thank all of our producers who sent us some treasure. $50 and above, we will thank you profusely for supporting the show. We got a lot of people who came in just under the wire for the Commodore promotion, which ends on Wednesday. Wednesday, yes. So I guess that's your last chance. And we're going to thank the executive and associate executive producers right now. That's $200 or above for the episode. You become an associate executive producer. We read your note. That title is good for the rest of your life. You can use it anywhere. Hollywood credits are accepted. You could go to the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
Hey, by the way, Wednesday is the 100th day of the Trump administration also.
Oh, martial law. That's perfect. Martial law. An executive producer credit for you if you're $300 or above, and we will read your note. And we kick it off with Al Vocado, which sounds like a pseudonym to me, from Rockaway Beach, New York, 58008. That's five. That's boobs backwards. I just noticed. I request anonymity. I choose to identify as Commodore Al Vocado. I could use a double karma, so there's no note to be read during the show. Well, there's a whole note here. What's he talking about?
He's got a whole note. What?
I do request an American-made de-douching, please. Oh, man, I'm sorry. I'm messing it up.
You've been de-douched.
There you go. That is made in America. No AI. I was introduced to No Agenda with Adam's appearance on the Motley Fool podcast with Chris Hill. Wow. I do not remember ever being on that show.
I don't think you were.
He says, I couldn't say when that was, 2018. I don't think I have ever been on the Motley Fool podcast. 500 is for one of the last pre-tariff Commodore ships, and 8008 to support the path laid by the distinguished producer from North Carolina, the home state of my childhood. That would be our Viscount, I guess. Is he from North Carolina?
Talking about the Duke of Luna?
Yeah. No, he's not. No, he's the Duke of Luna. It's not North Carolina.
Yeah, that's our Duke of Luna.
Oh, that is, okay. And he goes on to say,
lover America and boobs. He's from Concord, North Carolina.
There you go. That's him. So it's in support of him. Hypocrite of the week alone is worth reading the newsletter, people. John and Adam, thanks for the show's humor, dignity, positive feel, and breadth of topics while cutting through the obfuscations. The other producers' contributions are also appreciated. It all makes for a truly great show and experience. That's right. Your No Agenda show is an experience. Many talk about making the world a better place. You are doing something about it. Cheers from the beaches of New York City. Rockaway Beach. Thank you. Huh. Oh, wait. Double up karma for him.
You've got... karma.
Did you give him his de-douching there in the middle?
Yeah, I gave him. I gave him the de-douching, yeah.
Sorry. Mm-hmm. David Timmons in Oklahoma City, OKC. $500. I just donated a Commodore $500 thing, but have a bit over $500 in other donations. So this is not only a Commodore donation, but also makes me a knight. Oh, okay, well,
you got it. For that. Yeah, you got it.
Please knight me as Sir Demo Dave, and I guess Sir Commodore Demo Dave would be it. Yeah. Commodore Sir Demo Dave? Question mark. He says he's obsessed. Yeah. I am not sure how that works, but that's
works
fine.
That way. It's fine. Perfect.
Either way, I love all of you, and God loves you even more.
Amen. Diego Saints is in Plattsmouth, Nebraska, $500. Commodore Part Rican. Commodore Part Rican. I like that. So instead of Puerto Rican, Part Rican. All he wants is a de-douching.
You've been de-douched.
So Sean in where's CR? Is this, that's not Puerto Rico. Morris San Jose CR.
CR.
Costa Rica.
Costa Rica. There you go. Costa Rica.
It's gotta be. Gotta be
Sir
Costa
Sean,
Rica.
Sir Sean.
Stereo Conan. Goat Karma for all the high speed No Agenda listeners. And I'm not sure what that means. From Sir Sean Knight of the cisgendered third world jungle.
You've got karma.
That's the high speed. The high speed is the luge, I guess. Julian Torado. Deutschland. Torado. Karlsruhe. Deutschland, $500. Dear John and Adam, first of all, please de-douche me.
You've been de-douched.
Jingle request, they're eating the dogs, plus that's true, and I would like to become Commodore Jay the Plumber. No Agenda is the reason why I was able to stay strong in the times of the COVID vaccinations, when my employer would have liked to see me properly filled out vaccination passport. Shame on our union, by the way. But I resisted the vax successfully. Instead, it was necessary for me and the other vaccine skeptics to visit one of the many Corona Testationen
around the city each working day. 4 months. The other vaccinated colleagues of mine were exempted by this rule and were free to just visit work, sometimes coughing and sniffing. To this day, no kidding. To this day, I'm very thankful for the both of you informing all of us back in the days about the reports of all kinds of horrible side effects by this insane gene therapy. 4 more years. And I have a bonus clip. This is from the BBC. This is BBC, very famous for their snooker. Have you seen this clip of the snooker? Snooker.
The game?
Snooker, yeah, the game. That's like pool, but with different...
Yeah, it's like pool, and the balls are smaller, and the rules are different.
So listen to the commentators from the BBC with this particular snooker play.
Yeah, very controlled. I seem to remember reading an interview, I think, where Ben was talking about...
62.
After what he feels was the... COVID jab, and then he immediately feeling
63
unusual, that his hand was shaking a lot, and I hadn't seen him play since then, but no sign of that now. That's good. Looks rock solid on the shot.
Rock solid.
70. Yes, his hands do look steady. Remember when we had 71. The jab, they'd say to you, can you please stick around for 5 minutes or 10 minutes, make sure you feel okay. And it was in that 5 or 10 minutes, he either fainted or collapsed. It was one of the two. Then he felt fine, and he went home, and he collapsed again. So in the immediate aftermath of his jab, he collapsed twice.
75.
And ever since then, it's been a very, very gradual up and down return to full health. And I know there are certain weeks where... In the early days, he couldn't practice more than an hour a day because it would be so exhausting. I think he's learnt to manage that. Still has periods, if he's feeling tired, where it comes back a little bit. But by and large, touch wood, he is healthy again.
But the normalization of this is amazing to me.
Worst bonus clip ever.
It works better with the video, I guess.
They're eating the dogs.
That's true.
Oh, man, I got the wrong that's true again. How can that be? It's true. What is this?
It's true.
I know, but it's there's something wrong with my system. Now, hold on a second. What? It's not showing up.
Stand by.
That's true. What's this?
We welcome in ISIS.
No, that's not it.
I remember
that's
that.
True.
There it is.
That's true.
There it is. Mark it.
Yes, it's marked. I got it. That's true.
You're writing classic. Call it classic. That's true.
That's true classic. I'm going to rename it right now. Okay, that's true.
Robert Petruska. That was Julian Toronto, by the way.
Classic.
That was for him. Yes. Robert Petruska's up, and he's in Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania, and he's also in for $500. We'd appreciate that. In the morning, donation slump? Yes. I bet the newsletter lately has been nothing but a plea for a buck. It's always the same at the beginning.
I love this. This is a great note.
Please consider adding actual content to the newsletter.
All right. So we've discussed this before. Sometimes, because I usually proofread the newsletter. I didn't get to proofread it yesterday. John will sometimes put actual content, like he'll write a little essay, an essaylet, and what do I always say?
Dog, this will get nothing. We'll get no donations.
The minute you put real content in it, no donations. This is a fact. This is a fact of nature.
The ones that get the best, there was content in this last one. The Carolyn Levitt stuff was quite interesting, I thought.
Yeah, well, that's why no one donated. Hello.
And I thought it was probably too interesting. You're right. And then I talked about the judges. I did get some feedback on the judges. The guy, one of our producers called, said, the judges thing, you're wrong. Anyway, so that was content and help.
Yeah,
did not anyway, help. So he wants more content. Thank you. We got to go to my Substack column. Go read that. Dvorak.substack.com. Thank you, he says. Oasis. With that out of the way, I appreciate what you do for the show. Keep it up.
Carm. We go to Riverside, California. Gopher Coach checks in with 333.33 and says, thank you for your courage for being the demagogues of sanity and for your tireless work ethic. I commend you for always working even on the holidays like last Easter 420 Earth Hitler Sunday. Do you know who else works tirelessly every day? Those gophers. Oh, it's an ad. Those what a transition.
Gophers.
Those gophers in your yard.
It's a gopher ad.
It's a gopher ad. Those gophers in your yard constantly eating up your beautiful lawn and landscaping. If you live in or around the Temecula Valley or Riverside, California, then you need Gopher Stop to come out and remove those unwanted underground rodents. Here at Gopher Stop, we'll eradicate your gophers faster than you can say C-cot. What's that? What's C-cot? C-E-C-O-T.
I have no idea.
Typically in just 2 days and without the use of poison or artificial dyes, so it's safe for your dogs, kids, and garden. Just go to gopherstop.biz. That's gopherstop.biz and request a free quote over the phone and schedule immediate service. Unless your non-flip phone is banished to your drawer, you can simply yell at your AI search, "What the heck is GopherStop?" and get the full lowdown on us. Discounts for seniors, veterans, and Tesla owners. By the way, I am an expert gopher trapper.
Explain.
I got really good at trapping gophers with traditional traps. You got to know where to put the trap, and you can.
What get do you do bit. After you trap the gopher?
You eat it. You take that sucker and you cook them up. The gopher gets killed. He gets killed by the trap.
It's a big mouse trap.
It's a big mouse trap. Yeah. Yeah, no. Yeah, with spikes. Poor suckers. Yeah. Well, I'm good at. You got to know because there's always near. You got to put it near the water. If it's there's water, you got to put it at the end of the tunnel. That's what you got to do. You trap them on their way out. But I'm not like GopherStop.biz, my friends, because they give discounts to Tesla owners.
You had a request there at the end.
Oh, I don't see any requests. Is there something that I just scroll down? Oh, would you please? Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't see that. Yeah, that's a problem. That's the problem with your long notes, people. Would you give me they're eating the dogs and what's the other one? Look at that.
Look at that juice and Hot Pockets.
That okay. Juice. Hold on. Juice. Can you see that juice? And the Hot Pockets. Okay. But they, of course, want a Hot Pockets JCD. I got you.
They're eating the dogs.
Oh, my gosh. Can you see that juice?
Hot Pockets.
There you go.
I wish they'd put that woman back on Home Shopping Network.
She was great.
William Alston's great. He's in El Paso, Texas. He came with 330-333. And he says he hasn't donated in a while. And here you go. I have a coworker with family and friends in Turkey. I hope recovery after the earthquake is going well. Please send karma. Thanks. And have them send us a report.
Yes. We'd love a report from Turkey.
You've got karma.
Yeah. Don't talk about that anymore, do we? That was quite the... What was it? How many were dead? Like 60,000?
I don't know. It was crazy. Not good.
No. Jacob Cram is in Camas, Washington.
Camas.
333.33. Yes. ITM gents donating for Adam's excellent papal prediction. Cardinal Seurat is exactly who we need as bulwark against trans Maoism. No jingles, just prayers for pontifical perfection. JP2, or as John would put it, the Polish guy. Pray for us. I will.
Greg Dismore, an interesting name. 333-33, long time boner, first time donor. Give him a de-douching.
You've been de-douched.
Saw John's email about poor donations and decided it was the time. I started returning some value for value. And I decided it was the time I started to return some value for the value I've received for over the years. Oh, he's got beautiful. His deduction.
Then we have Baron OG Godcaster from Riverside, California, the one, the only Mr. Steve Webb. He's been in podcasting for over 20 years. 333. Hey, guys. It's been a while since my last donation, but the lovely lady Leanne and I have been in the midst of a post-Hurricane Milton renovation done on a home we own in beautiful Plant City, Florida.
It was flooded, and we basically had to rebuild the entire interior, so it was quite the project. The good news is that it's now complete with tons of upgrades, and it really turned out great. To celebrate, this is a switcheroo donation to the lovely Lady Leanne on her path to damehood. Let me just put Lady Leanne in there so that we get that. I don't want to mess her up. Okay, boom, done. Also, we are offering the newly refurbished home in Plant City for sale. No Agenda producers can search for 6005 Ike Smith Road on Zillow.com to see photos. 6005 Ike Smith Road on Zillow.com. Contact our agent and mention No Agenda for a $5,000 discount.
Well, there's your discount.
God's richest blessings to you, Adam and John, and to the No Agenda Nation. Jingle, Obama, you're in my house.
That's a different one than I thought. How about this one?
Hey, listen. Hey, you're in my house. Hey, shame on you. You shouldn't be doing this.
There you go. All right, Steve. Thank you very much. The lovely Lady Leanne has been switcherooed.
Drop to associate executive producer with Jack DeAngelis in Emmett, Idaho. $250, no note, no nothing. We'll give him a double up karma.
You've got double up karma.
Chad Lawrence in West Jordan, Utah, 235.95. Very short. He says, I just request jobs karma.
Jobs, 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 and jobs. Let's vote for jobs. Yeah. You've got karma.
Now I have the bioprose.com from Driftwood, Texas, 211. They actually sent a note in, I have.
Oh, I was going to say, the bioprose.
Yeah, it's a new ad.
we got a new sponsor on the show, everybody.
Donation 22211, which is 3 2s and 2 1s. Yeah. Congratulations, Crackpot and Buzzkill. The bioprose.com is starting a no agenda show sponsorship. Q2 has arrived, and we're excited to participate in this value-for-value paradigm whilst informing the No Agenda Podsphere producers about our flagship product,
BioSeptic Pro. I'm looking at it right now.
It's like probiotics for your septic tank.
Oh.
Designed for anaerobic septic systems.
Oh, I have an aerobic septic. Oh, thank you. I'm going to try this. I have an aerobic septic system.
It's anaerobic.
Yeah, anaerobic. That's what I have.
Well, there's a difference between, yeah, okay. They'll send you some. I'm sure they will. BioSeptic Pro digests grease, fats, oil, sludge, paper, really, mm-hmm. and organic matter with ease. Contains no chemicals. I think it's living stuff. No GMOs. And is safe for all pipes and plumbing. Also human, animal, and people dog safe. Say goodbye to a smelly septic system. That'll be the day. By heading over to the bioprose.com. Use the code ITM at checkout for 20% off your order. Please play the BioPros official jingle, which is Trump Big Massive Dumps. Get it? It's a joke.
Yeah, yeah.
And Plumbing Goat Karma. Congratulations, Crackpot and Buzzkill. You are now being sponsored by... Okay, bioprose.com. All right. Dumps.
They call them dumps. Big, massive dumps.
You've got karma.
So an anaerobic system is, that was invented in Louisiana by the swamp people. It continuously pumps oxygen into the system, so, and then it sprays it out over the lawn as clear fresh water. I have my own water generating plant here, so you don't have to have the septic system emptied. It's a genius.
Well, that's interesting.
You should look it up. Yeah, it's an American
invention. I don't really care.
Just because you don't have one, you don't care because you want one. Matthew,
I use the municipal system.
Yeah, you poop in the city. Matthew Babula I think. Panama City Beach, Florida, 215-22. Hey, my wife is an artist. She was in the gallery for a long time. The gallery itself was open for 20-plus years, but the building was recently sold and the new owners didn't renew the lease. This has been a financial hit, but more mentally tough on my wife. Please give her some karma and let everyone know that for fine art, acrylic on canvas and pencil drawings, you can visit her website, jamiebabula.com, JAMIEBABULA.com. That's a very nice gift for your wife.
You've got karma.
It is nice. Onward to Alexander Grandin in South Bend, Indiana, 212-12. And I have another note on a card.
Sounds like a real note to me. I didn't get any of these notes today. What happened?
Jay's sick.
Oh, what does she have? COVID?
COVID.
Yeah.
Or something. I don't know. Nobody knows what they got. Thank you for your courage. First time donor, please de-douche.
You've been de-douched.
Now, here's an interesting take. I love the donation segment.
Ah, there you go.
The talent and range of producers is awesome. You two are great.
Ah.
Thanks, Alex G. Scott Simon jingle, please.
Oh, okay, hold on a second.
Yeah, look that one up.
Scott Simon. Yeah, I got him. I got him.
Suffering succotash. I'm Scott Simon.
He also has a very pleasant P.S. that he doesn't necessarily want us to read, but he's a Mason.
Oh, what degree?
He's a bricklayer.
Oh,
a real Mason.
A real Mason. Yeah, for all your brickwork, go to Alexander Grandin. Matthew Martell is in Broomall, Pennsylvania, $210.60. And he, of course, says, don't forget to sign up for the MartellHardware.com email newsletter for your hardware tip of the day. Well, what is this all about now?
Another stolen valor.
Use coupon code O'Reilly33 for an additional 10% off your order. Sales karma for the self-employed and a JCD Hot Pockets.
Hot Pockets.
You've got karma.
Wilkinson Therio in New Orleans, 210.60. A happy Jazz Fest, gents. It's time of year in New Orleans for the live music and amazing food and money. Money for you. I apologize, but it's been a while since my last donation show, 1500 to be exact. Changes in jobs, caring for my elderly parents. I'm sorry, I got the hiccups now. You know, stuff. May this be my return to regular sacrificial greenbacks.
Okay.
This is also my chance to claim my knighthood. 1500 marked my crossover, the $1,000 threshold, and it was my birthday gift to myself for 45. October 26th is a great day. Although I had included a note announcing my intended knighthood, my donation was read without the note being included at the round table. I know, bummer.
Uh-oh.
Anyway, I would like to be known as Sir Wilkinson of the Crescent City. Does that make me a black knight?
Well, if we missed him.
I don't know. May I have a... he should have called us out earlier if he wants to be a black knight. Yeah. You can call yourself a black knight if you want. May I have we as a jingle?
It's been a while since that was requested.
Never heard that one.
Yeah. And there's Eli the coffee guy with $210. He's in Bensonville, Illinois, and he says, this is a switcheroo. This donation is on behalf of the Chicago meetup. Please credit it to Baron NBS, who is making an escape from Chicago. Oh, they had a meetup. Okay, very good. We had 17 people who came out, including one producer from the UK. We discussed matters from AI and tariffs to Afropop and antique Persian rugs. I could not have spent Saturday evening with a better bunch of people. Many were also happy that I brought coffee. But there's no need to feel left out of the fun. If you can't make it to a meetup, visit GigawattCoffeeRoasters.com and use code ITM20 for 20% off your order. It's like a meetup in a cup. Meet up in a cup, stay caffeinated, says Eli the coffee guy. I shall make that change right now for Baron MBS. Thank you, Eli.
I have a super long note from Sir Isaac Knight of the Firearms Instructors, and he wants a de-douching.
You've been de-douched.
Calling himself the Deadbeat Knight. It's been a long time since my last donation. For the last 13 years, I've run a firearms training company in Colorado that is based on the value-for-value model called Guns for Everyone. Tyrants in the Colorado legislature have passed dozens of terrible gun laws since 2021, and while we can't fight them all ourselves, Guns for Everyone is dedicating our efforts to fight a law that drastically changed the mandatory training requirements to apply for a concealed handgun permit.
Yeah.
Tyrants are making it exceedingly difficult for students and instructors to complete the new requirements and also understand how they are supported, supposed to be implemented. We are raising money for our current litigation against power-tripping sheriffs as well as the state itself, is the state itself to overturn part of all this shitty law. We are raffling off a rare Mulot VEPR Vepr on a 7.62x54R. It's a big ass Russian AK.
Pattern rifle. Looks cool. Yeah.
Those interested in joining the cause for freedom and a chance to win this collector's item, please visit gunsforeveryone.com/legal-fund. Raffle ends on the 31st of May. Sir Semper Tyrannus, can I please have some goat karma to stick it to the man, Sir Isaac?
You've got karma.
And we're almost there. Good good group here for them. I guess the second newsletter helped. That's really good. Linda Lupatkin is in Lakewood, Colorado, $200. And she says, jobs karma, please. And for a competitive edge with the resume that gets results, go to imagemakersinc.com. That's imagemakersinc with a K for all of your executive resume and job search needs. And work with Linda Lou, the Duchess of Jobs and writer of resumes.
Jobs, 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 and jobs. Let's vote for jobs. You've got
Era Dadarian's next on the list, and he's from Trabuco Canyon. He comes in with $200 and says, you can count on the Knights to respond.
Yeah, I love that.
Referring to the newsletter. Now, he did send me a cutting board.
Oh, how good is his cutting board, huh?
It's ludicrous.
It weighs like 100 pounds, that
thing. It weighs a ton, and it's got so much work on it. It's ridiculous. I don't know. I mean, it's really more of a presentation board than something. I wouldn't even cut on it.
I cut on mine and it didn't even hurt it at all.
Well, it seems pretty hard. It's, that's for sure.
Like cherry wood.
There's somebody without a last name named Hank, and he's in, I forgot what part of California is in one of the areas, and he sent me a whole bunch of weird things.
Okay.
With no note. A bunch of candy bars and some Kinder eggs, the real ones from Germany.
You should eat them all, John. Nothing suspicious about that.
Well, the Kinder Egg is a hollow product that has a toy inside that I can't figure out how to open.
You bite in it. You bite into the egg.
As a policy, this is a hard piece of plastic.
The egg breaks open. As a policy,
The egg is paper thin. It breaks open. There's a thing inside.
Yeah.
And there's a trick to opening it. I don't know what it is.
As a policy, I don't eat candy that people send me to the P.O. boxes.
Unless
it comes from a company. Like, you know, those Little John's guys.
He also sent me two Japanese 2,000 yen notes. Oh. Which I believe if you do the math, it's 100 to 1, so it would be...
$40. James Green is our last associate executive producer, and he's in Elfland, North Carolina. And he says, this is in honor of a dear friend, Nick Dawkins, who passed away recently from cancer. I bitched about work and life issues and watched the man in life's darkest days gracefully and by example spread his infectious Jesus freak passion. thanks as always. And while we're on that, before we end this donation segment, I got a note from Dame Colorado Care Bear, and she says, I would like emergency karma for Sir Vito, who lost his wife last week. Sending love and healing to our friend as he battles this trial. The Colorado No Agenda Meetup group comes together in support and love for our friend. Thank you very much. So, yes, emergency karma for him, of course.
You've got karma.
And that does conclude our executive and associate executive producer segment for episode 1759. We appreciate you so much. Thank you. And as always, these credits can be used anywhere that Hollywood style credits are recognized and accepted, including the White House Correspondents Association. But you have to be wearing a brooch. And of course, we'll be thanking everybody $50 and above in our second segment coming up soon.
Our formula is this. We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
Well, I have a report on the reemergence of our old buddies.
Our old buddies?
The White Helmets.
Oh, you mean the guys from Syria? Those White Helmets?
Yeah.
The ones who faked all of those pictures?
Yeah.
Huh.
Okay. Yeah, they're back in action. Now they're firemen. but they're still the same group.
And where are they now?
They're still, they came down from the hills and they're still in Syria, but now they're downtown. This is the White Helmets report from PBS.
During Syria's long civil war, emergency responders wearing white helmets became famous. They were known for running into harm's way to rescue civilians from collapsed buildings in the aftermath of regime airstrikes. The White Helmets were nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize and featured in an Oscar-winning documentary. Well, now with Syria's dictator Bashar al-Assad gone, the White Helmets have a new mission and a new challenge. NPR's Lauren Freyer takes us to a Damascus firehouse to see them in action.
Oh, wow, this is all burned. So we're rushing into this building. Emergency here.
Firefighters rush into a burning building in the Syrian capital. Firefighter Tariq Talib says they managed to extinguish the flames in time and no one was injured. Residents are gobsmacked. They got here so quickly and they didn't ask for any bribes, says Mohammed Bassam Saeed, a retiree who lived through Syria's civil war and says he never got help like this. These new firefighters wear gold and navy uniforms and iconic white helmets. For most of the war, the white helmets operated only in rebel-held areas. Dictator Bashar al-Assad had decked the capital with billboards vilifying them as traitors and terrorists. I never believed any of that, though, Saeed says, thanking the firefighters profusely.
Thank you.
When Assad fell in December, a White Helmets convoy rolled south from rebel territory and into Damascus. I felt joy, grief, and shock all together, says Amr Zarife, a White Helmet who's from Damascus but hadn't been here since 2018 when he responded to a chemical weapons attack by Assad's forces.
When you do a documentary about a group which is clearly hoaxing, shouldn't your award be taken back?
I would think so.
Because the White
House, that's never happens.
The White House Correspondents Association, they, I think they handed out an award, or they highlighted the documentary, or no, the news report about how the Biden's mental health was covered up, and they're giving out an award for that while they all participated in the cover up.
Isn't that amazing?
Nothing.
Well, I think some explanation will reveal it. This is the clips of reveal.
Oh,
and I think you'll figure this out. Why this has nothing to come of it, and why the White Helmets are still being extolled.
Now he lives in a Damascus firehouse where the White Helmets have set up new headquarters. Their founder Ra'ed Saleh is now in Syria's cabinet. And the volunteer force he founded 12 years ago is extending its reach for the first time to the entire country.
It's the journey of the Syrian people and the Syrian revolution.
Deputy Leader Farouk Habib says their workload has actually quadrupled, even though the war is over.
Most of our country is destroyed. Half of our people lost their homes and they are displaced either internally or they became refugees.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that was that wasn't the killer clip. We'll wrap it up with this one.
This is the killer clip. This is the one.
Now our main mission is to deal with the legacy of the war. Help to find the missing persons. We're dealing with the mass graves, cluster munition.
They're also repairing roads and water pipes. These are people who started as shopkeepers, teachers, gas station attendants, and engineers. Habib was a banker.
I was a regional manager at a private bank in Syria. When the revolution started, some people carried guns, some people left, and some people volunteered.
In the opposition-held Northwest, the White Helmets served about 5 million people. Habib says they're now stretching to eventually meet the needs of more than 20 million Syrians. Even as their budget is cut, USAID, the foreign aid agency dismantled by the Trump administration, it used to be the White Helmets' biggest funder.
Oh, gee. Wouldn't you know it? Oh, those horrible Trump people. Horrible.
So we're funding the White Helmets.
Yeah, of course. We were funding.
The American taxpayer.
We were funding the White Helmets.
It's picking up the tab. Yeah, we were funding it.
I have a couple Middle East clips that I'd like to play. We're running out of time for today, but I think that we are nearing a solution for Palestine as there's been some political moves.
During a convention in Ramallah, Mahmoud Abbas named the first ever vice president of the Palestinian Liberation Organization. 64-year-old Hussein El-Sheikh, who has long been considered one of Abbas's closest aides. El-Sheikh was born in the West Bank and spent 11 years in an Israeli prison in his youth. Then went on to become a veteran politician for the Fatah movement. In 2022, he was named Secretary General of the PLO, which oversees the Palestinian Authority, and was made responsible for civilian affairs. At the time, the appointment generated criticism that he was being groomed to replace Abbas, but El-Sheikh insisted he would push for a democratic process.
Any future president of the Palestinian people can only be a president elected by the Palestinian people through the ballot box. The Palestinian president must be elected. The Palestinian president will not be appointed. He will not come to power by force or because of some regional or international interest or arrive on an Israeli tank.
Abbas has not held elections since 2006 and is the president of both the PLO and the Palestinian Authority. His decision to promote El-Sheikh as vice president is widely considered a move to assure a successor and to appease Arab and Western powers that have pushed for the organization's reform and for them to have a central role in the post-war governance of the Gaza Strip.
This guy, this Hussein El-Sheikh, he's a ghost. I mean, he's been around, but there's nothing you can find on this guy. And he looks like he's been in the West. You know, he's just one of those guys. So to me, that says moves are getting made. They got to put someone in place who can't have a boss. They'll have a vote, I'm sure. And they'll bring him in. So I find that encouraging. One of my friends is in Tehran right now, and he's been sending me pictures. Man, the media does such a horrible job of psyoping us about Iran. I mean, it almost looks like the Iran pictures from the 70s. You've got modern cars, modern buildings, lots of women without head coverings, makeup. No,
this is a lie.
They've got a hockey team. They've got all kinds of, I mean, it's really, it looks good.
If you take pictures out of Moscow, they're even better.
But Moscow, we know, but Tehran. Now, it's still a stinking city. It says there's a lot of pollution, but it looks really modern and beautiful. Whenever we see Iran on television, it's a bunch of towel heads walking around in dust. Thanks, M5M. So we're currently in negotiations with the Iranians, and I found a report on Deutsche Welle about these negotiations.
Staying with Iran, a third round of talks about a new nuclear deal between Tehran and Washington has reportedly begun in Oman. Iranian state TV showed its delegation in Muscat and announced the negotiations started midday. Officials from both sides are expected to hold in-depth discussions over how to limit Iran's nuclear program in exchange for the lifting of some of the crushing economic sanctions the U.S. has imposed on the Islamic Republic. For more, I'm joined by Niloufar Galami from DW's Persian service. Good to see you. Where do the talks stand right now?
Yeah, seems to take longer this time. A post on X from Iran's foreign ministry spokesperson says talks continues in a serious atmosphere and there's no comment from U.S. team yet. Earlier today, an Iranian official also told Reuters that the expert-level negotiations are difficult, complicated, and serious. According to both sides, the latest two rounds were positive and they seem to be talking about the details on this stage, and Iran's emphasizes particularly on lifting sanctions. But also, there was some reports that Iran's missile program is an obstacle to progress. Iran has previously said they won't negotiate on defense capabilities, but we have to wait and see.
So the question is, of course, what do the Iranians want?
Now, Trump wants a deal. What does Iran want?
Of course, they also want an agreement because they know that the other options are not very pleasant. Let's not forget that the Islamic Republic is in a vulnerable position in these negotiations. The regime is facing various domestic and international crises and challenges. Its proxies in the region have been severely weakened, and the shadow of war hangs over Iran. In addition to that, any agreement that only preserve Iran's nuclear program is a relief, as there is a possibility of a complete dismantling.
And then, most importantly, and the reason why I brought up my friend in Tehran, is what do the Iranian people want?
What about Iranians? What do they actually want?
For them, like, it might be minor economic relief, for example, but the Iranian people have experienced 2015 deal. At the time, Iran's economic situation was not as bad as it is today. But according to experts, even that deal failed to improve the quality of life of Iranian people or even change the social situation and freedom in Iran. Instead, the government used the additional resources to further strengthen its proxies in the region and suppress its citizens inside Iran. There are different views on that. Some are waiting for the final results, some are in favor of an agreement, and others are pessimistic. Like, for example, a large group of Iranians consider any agreement a failure and raise this question of why the Iranian people should pay the price for the Islamic Republic's policies.
Yeah, I think the Iranian people, well, they're more American than we realize, of course. Just like the Russians.
Yeah, well, they won't be if we bomb them.
No, they won't be. Hey, I just got a new video in. So that meeting between President Trump and President Volodymyr Zelensky, initially they had three chairs in the temple. And Macron thought that he was going to be sitting down with them. And you can see Trump, like, you know, not shaking his extended hand, then touching him on the arm. And then Macron leaves and they remove the third chair. That's interesting.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
That has not been reported.
Well, no, only on your No Agenda show. At almost the end of the show, I might add. We are running late, but if you have something you want to sneak in there. Something that you think is...
Some shorties. I got some shorties. I got a couple of different shorties. Let's do the Real ID, upcoming Real ID fiasco, which is going to cause nothing but trouble at the airports.
In just over 2 weeks, a major change is coming for air travelers across the U.S. Starting next month, the TSA will require adults flying domestically to present a Real ID compliant driver's license or other approved identification. NTD's Christina Corona.
We're standing outside of a packed DMV here in the city of El Monte, where many people are lining up to get their real ID before May 7th. You may begin the process online, however, you will have to finish it at the DMV. Soon, travelers will need a real ID to board domestic flights. After the May 7th, 2025 deadline, it will also be required to enter federal facilities like military bases and courthouses. Without a compliant ID, travelers risk being turned away at airport security. This is part of the Real ID Act of 2005, born out of the 9/11 Commission's push for stronger ID standards. Real IDs are marked with a star or a design like California's bare outline. Other acceptable IDs include U.S. passports, military IDs, DHS trusted traveler cards like Global Entry, and acceptable photo IDs issued by a federally recognized tribal nation, Indian tribe, just to name a few. To get a real ID, you'll need documents proving your full legal name, social security number, address, and legal presence. One Southern California resident shared his experience navigating the process.
I've been here for maybe 20 minutes, so not too bad. Yeah, the line's moving pretty slow, but yeah, not too bad. A lot of stuff was online, like they had us upload our document, like some documents like a birth certificate or a water bill to prove we live here. And just like basic information like address, things like that, just to prove you live here.
In California, the DMV is extending hours at select offices, including three in the Bay Area, on Saturday, May 3rd to help meet the deadline.
That's so American. You can show us your social security card or a water bill. Either one is just
yeah, a water bill.
Water bill. You know, did I tell you about my my global entry experience coming back into the country?
Not that I can think of.
So, you know, so Tina and I, because you know, it's like
you're a big fan of this,
but I hate it. I hate the idea that I had to do it, but you know, we always have to transfer either in Atlanta or Dallas or Houston. And you know, you have 2 hours typically to get from your international flight to your domestic flight. And it, you know, we stood an hour in line for an hour and a half when we came back from Italy. And luckily our other flight was delayed, but it, you know, it's not fun. And then you see all these jamokes. Oh, I've got global entry. Blah, 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 blah. I'm like, I want to be that guy. So, and you get TSA pre-check with it as well. So I'm completely in the system. But you, they give you a card. You don't need this card. You go through the global entry. You stand in front of the thing. Takes a picture of your face. It's all integrated. Boom. Keep walking. And then as you're walking up towards the custom guy, he says, Curry, you're good to go. It's the whole system is all facial recognition. It's all implemented. We're all in the system. This is our future life is all facial recognition. It's quite disgusting. So this real ID is just a little step, because when you get your real ID, guess what? Photo, facial recognition. It's all going to be facial. And they don't tell you. They don't tell you what they're going to use it for. It's really.
Yeah, use it to track you down. That's what they're going to use it for.
I'm going to show my support by donating to No Agenda. Imagine all the people who could do that. Oh, yeah, that'd be fab. Yeah, on No Agenda.
Yeah, so on Thursday, hopefully I'll have a report about Ashlyn Speed. I think she's racing today in the Mazda MX-5 action. With the No Agenda car. It's a little sticker on the back, but we call it the No Agenda car. But right now, as we have tip of the day coming up, we have some Commodores, we got some Knights, of course, some birthdays to celebrate, and John's tip of the day and our end of show mixes. We would like to thank the rest of our donors who supported us, $50 and over.
Yeah, starting with Nicholas Carabut in Sebring, Florida. It came in at $196. Top-notch heating and air conditioning. And Manti, Utah. Go check them out. $125. David Byrne in Staten Island, New York. $123.45. Loves his truck. He loves what he does. Commodore Sir Mark in Warsaw, Poland. $123.45. Now you're talking.
All right.
Agent 99. $105.35. He wants some jingles we don't have. I don't know about killing the ducks. Polywog 77 dot Etsy.com. Okay. Damascus, Oregon, 10535. He's got something to say. There's one. I don't know. Yeah, he wants his brother. His brother, Robbie, who's called out as a douchebag.
Douchebag.
And he needs a de-douching.
You've been de-douched.
James Zuckel, Tucson, Arizona, 10535. Dame Nikki Ray in Tulatin, Oregon, 100. Tracy Sullivan in Fowler, Indiana, 100. Scott Merrill in Calabasas, California, 100. Carrie Law in Warren, Ohio, 100. Sir Loud Pipes in Charlotte, North Carolina, 88.88. Kevin McLaughlin, there he is. He's mentioned earlier. He conquered North Carolina, 8008. He's the Archduke of Luna, lover of America, and lover of boobs. D.D. Thompson in St. Charles, Missouri, 73. 73s. Sir Fat Dad in North Little Rock, Arkansas, 69. And he's got a birthday coming up. We'll put that on. It's on there. It's on the list.
It is.
James Frederich in McFarland, Wisconsin, 6580. This is a Dave Smith donation.
Dave Smith donation. Which is never funny. Interesting.
It's never funny. Ken Weinstock in Tucker, Georgia, 6502. There it is. No jingles, no karma, he says, but that's a chip donation. That's the people that know what they're doing. They make a 6502 donation. Stephen Johnson in Fishers, Indiana, 6161.
On behalf of the three young human resources, Tyler, Henry, and Sam.
Nancy Murphy, Sam Bruno, 60. Sir Paul in Twickenham, Middlesex, UK.
Oh, he's
55,
leaving. 55. He's trying to escape the hellhole London has become and moving out to the countryside. Sir Paul. All right, brother. Hope it works out.
He needs some house buying karma. We'll give him some house buying karma at the end.
We will. We will.
Eric Pulse in Katy, Texas, 5515. Binger in Yankton, South Dakota, 5512. Another happy birthday to Fireball Tack from Binger. She turned 12. Well, she's a fireball. Stephen Smith in Cumberland Gap, Tennessee, 5510. Sir, or Baron Anonymous Cop there, our buddy in Redwood City, 5510. Sean Pendergast in Vista, California, 55. Virginia Urzua in Oakland, California, 55. It's another birthday call out for Sonia. Craig Nuzzo in Oswego, Illinois. Another birthday for his brother Scott, 54-29. A lot of birthdays today, by the way. Commodore Baron Victor in Corvallis, Oregon, 54-04. He's the Baron Victor of the Willamette Valley. Window Washer in Annandale, Virginia, 53-93. The Donnellys in Up Lawnmower. Up Lawnmower.
Up Lawnmower, not lawn.
I'm thinking lawnmower. Up Lawnmower. Scotland. Lawnmower.
Scotland.
East,
Scotland,
in UK. UK, Scotland. 5333.
Scotland. That's in Scotland.
I can't say it. Oh, it's Scotland?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, so it is. Kyle Tack. Tack.
You miss Kevin Adam in Clover, South Carolina.
5272. Also, Kyle Tack. In Yankton, South Dakota, 5272. Joshua Sire, Black Creek, BC, Canada, 5272. Eric Ortega, Sioux Falls, South Dakota. These are all $50 donors at 5272 is with the fees. Matthew Cargo in Goebbels, Michigan, and Waximized in Netherlands.
Bergenshoek.
Bergenshoek. Sirloin in Winter Haven, Florida, 5150. Sir Recalcitrant Crazy Steve, our buddy here in Santa Rosa, California, 5150.
Hey, by the way, Crazy Steve, Matt Long wants to talk to you, wants you to come to the meetup in Fredericksburg. Just saying.
Yes, you get on the phone. Get on the horn. Thomas Trim in Willoughby, Ohio, 5150. Sam Williams in Davenport, Iowa, 51. And now we get to the, this is an unemployment donation from Sam. He needs some new girlfriend karma. We'll give you that at the end. Just have John say, new girlfriend karma for Sam. Oh, I just did. George, now we're at the $50 donors, just the names, just the locations. There's 10 of them. George Wooshit in Lavernia, Texas. Jacqueline Connolly in Green Bay, Go Packers, Wisconsin. Christopher Stable in Forestall, Missouri. He's got a long note. See if there's anything in there worthwhile.
Yes. Well, he has more about the St. Louis nuclear waste. And he says a lot of friends and family die of cancer. Very uplifting note. He says HBO did a documentary on it called Atomic Homefront. So I'll watch that. I'll go take a look at that for sure.
He says, please watch. Maybe RFK Jr. is an op, but at least he came here to tour our town.
And hear the stories. Oh, good.
That's good. Richard Gardner, who I believe is in New York. Aaron Weisgerber in Bend, Oregon. Shalom Brody in Valley Stream, New York. Steve Greb in Lansdale, Pennsylvania. Susan Kritinich. Kritinich. In Columbus Heights, Minnesota. Isaiah Cicerelli in Thane, Wyoming. Richard Lindquist in Squim, Washington. And last on our list, everybody, we want to thank everyone for donating for this show. It helped a lot. Rose Richardson, and she's in Tucson, Arizona. And she wants some goat karma.
Well, thank you all very much for supporting us. Those are the donors, $50 and above. Again, thanks to our executive and associate executive producers. Many karmas requested. Here you go.
You've got karma.
You can go to noagendadonations.com. You can give us any number you want. You can make it up. We love the numerology. You can tell when we read off those donations. Again, thanks to our executive and associate executive producers and to those who came in under $50. We never mention those for reasons of anonymity, but you can always become a sustaining donor. We encourage that. Any amount, any frequency, it's all up to you. Noagendadonations.com. Binger and Kyle say happy birthday to Farron Fireball Tack, turned 12 on April 22nd. Dame Nikki Ray, happy birthday to her son Hayden, turns 22 on the 29th. Lauren, happy birthday to Eric Bradley. He turns 29 on April 29th as well. Also celebrating on the 29th is Sir Fat Dad. He'll be turning 55. And Virginia Urzua says happy birthday to Sonia Castillo, celebrating on the 29th. And finally, Craig Nuzzo, happy birthday to his brother Scott. We say happy birthday to all these people from everybody here at the best podcast in the universe. We have six Commodores. This is almost over. Now, you get a very handsome Commodore certificate because you do become an actual Commodore of the No Agenda show. You can go to noagendarings.com. That's where you can let us know exactly what you want on your Commodore certificate. And we say Commodore Alvocado, Commodore Demo Dave, Commodore Part Rican, Commodore Sir Sean, Commodore Jay the Plumber, and Commodore Robert Petruska. All of you are now official Commodores of No Agenda. Go to noagendarings.com to get your certificate. Commodores arriving. Wow. Last time we'll do that will be on this coming Thursday. Two knights to bring to the round table. So, Johnny, you can give us your knight blade.
There you go. I got it right here.
Beautiful. David Timmons and Wilkinson Terrio. Both of you have supported the No Agenda show in the amount of $1,000 or more. Therefore, I am very proud to pronunciate thee as Knights of the No Agenda Roundtable, Sir Demo Dave and Sir Wilkinson of the Crescent City. For you gentlemen, hookers and blow, rent boys and Chardonnay. We've got Polish potato vodka, diet soda and video games if you want it. We've got mustacholi and margaritas, redheads and rye, beers and blunts, Rubenesque women and rosé, geishas and sake, vodka and vanilla, bong hits and bourbon, sparkling cider and escort, ginger ale and gerbils, breast milk and pablum. But of course, we're all really here for the mutton and the mead. mutton and meat, always a favorite at the No Agenda Roundtable. Go to noagendarings.com. Of course, you might meet a couple of Commodores over there while you're checking it out. You can see the beautiful No Agenda Night Ring. It's a signet ring, so it comes with a couple of sticks of wax. You can do a lot of things with that, but we suggest you use it to melt down and use the signet ring to seal your important correspondence. I love getting those in the P.O. box. And thank you again for becoming Knights of the No Agenda Roundtable.
No Agenda
Meetup. Well, you heard it. The No Agenda Meetup crews, they support each other. We had Servito, of course, whose wife passed away, and the No Agenda Meetup crew there is surrounding him with love and compassion, and we just love hearing that. That is exactly what you get at a No Agenda Meetup. These are the people who will be your first responders in an emergency. Connection gives you protection at the No Agenda Meetups. You can find them all at noagendameetups.com. And we have one meetup report. It's a little long, but man, this is a record for Leo Bravo. This is his 62nd Los Angeles meetup, the flight of the No Agenda. And here is the report with 20 people.
Hey, everybody. This is for Munch Nuts here, fisting my nuts here with everybody here in L.A. Greetings to the gnomes of Zurich.
This is Ceramic Jar in the morning.
Hi! In the morning. Patrick here. Meant to write in a note after I got my instant ring. It is in the mail. It's on its way.
In the morning, crackpot and buzzkill. This is Lady Chanaka of California. I'm your Peaberry. Sticking it out in California with John C. and the wonderful people here at the LA meetup. Cheers to the best podcasters in the universe.
In the morning, this is Commodore Kirk.
Thanks, Adam, John, for all the media assassinations over the years. No Agenda is a blessing. Thank you, guys.
Hi, this is Julie. I'm having a great time at my first No Agenda meetup. In the morning.
This is Dame Laura of the Golden Mean dropping in from Washington State to the fine people in LA.
In the morning. This is the other Scott Horton, the one nobody talks about, having a great time at our meetup here with Leo Bravo and a few others that I came with. Great times. We're missing you here, Adam and John.
In the morning, this is Brian, just living all of my childhood fantasies of being a pilot. Plane's good, train's bad, but trains are probably fine too.
Hi, this is Greta, and I'm here with my boys, Tommy and Dev. I don't know where they are. They fucked off. But anyway, we love you guys. Thank you so much, Leo, for having these awesome meetups.
Hi. In the morning, this is Devil and Angel. Have a nice day.
In the morning, everyone, this is Tommy here. This is my umpteenth time at a meetup. I want to thank you, John and Adam, for continuing your podcast.
In the morning, John and Adam, this is Donna. This is my first meetup, and I'm also a listener of Curry and the Keeper. Shout out to Tina and Adam. Thanks so much. We love the show.
This is Sir Leah Kim Fopop. Happy Earth Day, guys. And just remember, Earth Day has the same day as Vladimir Lenin's birthday. Think about it.
What's going on with all these planes? We want more trains.
Quiet, you imbeciles. I'm listening to No Agenda.
Well, there you go. Record numbers out there in Los Angeles. That's fantastic. We have a couple of meetups taking place this week. On Thursday, the Northern Wake Public Slave Gathering kicks off at 6 o'clock at Potluck Hoppy Endings in Raleigh, North Carolina. And the South Austin Slaves on Slaughter Meetup. Huh. At Little Woodrow's in South Park Meadows. I don't know about this one. Nick Deli is doing that. 7 o'clock on Thursday. So, of course, I can't make it because it's after a show on a show day. And you do need to RSVP. Many more meetups can be found at the No Agenda Meetups website, noagendameetups.com. Give it a shot. Go check it out. You certainly want to. They're global. They have meetups all over the world. If you can't find one near you, start one yourself. It's guaranteed a party. That's for sure.
Sometimes you want to go hang out with all the nights and days. You want to be where you won't be, triggered or held to blame. You want to be where everybody feels the same. It's like a party.
Now I'm looking at my quad screen here. Would you believe, oh man, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Do you know what's happening right now on Capitol Hill?
Filibuster.
Booker and Jeffries are holding a sit-in.
Oh, not a sit-in.
A sit-in. They're holding a sit-in. We're sitting, and we're not going to budge.
It's like me holding a sit-in in my living room. Hey, I'm going to hold a sit-in until people change their ways. What are you doing?
If it's not on MSNBC, it's not a sit-in, my friend. You've got to get the cameras on you. All right, time to choose the ISO for the end of the show. I only have one. I don't think it's, I mean, it's okay, but I think you're going to knock me out of the park here. I see you have one, two, three. You've got four. So I'll just play mine and then we'll pick one of your winners. Okay.
Sure. You know what Dvorak says? He says bullcrap.
There you go. That's
that's no good.
I knew you would.
Okay. So
like
these are all the coded SS, and you'll see the reason why when you start listening to them.
Okay.
And we'll start at the bottom because there's a dupe in here that was done twice, done by one of our special producers. And this is, we'll start with Bozos.
These two guys are not Bozos.
Oh, Scott Simon. Nice.
These two guys are not Bozos.
That's pretty close for AI.
These two guys are not Bozos.
Except the end. Okay, what else you got?
Podcast.
That's what I call a great podcast.
We need him to say, I'm Scott Simon. We need him to tag himself. All right. What else you got?
Well, then I think it was borderline illegal already.
You think?
I'm pretty sure. Yeah. We'll get a note. So now we have a variation of the same one because our producer decided that it's a guy who does Scott Simon. He's got this. He's got a lot of voices.
What, you're saying this is not AI? This is a guy?
No, these are all AI.
Oh, okay.
But the producer who does the Scott Simon material is from his AI voice. He's trained a voice.
Trained the model, yes.
And it's a good model. In fact, the one with the horn is his. Okay, here we go. Something one.
Wow. Huh? That was something, right?
And two.
Wow, that was something, right?
I still like...
That's what I call a great podcast.
I think that's the best one.
Okay.
I like it a lot. I like it so much that I'm going to start the tip of the day jingle because it is time for John C. Dvorak's tip of the day.
Great advice for you and me. Just the tip with JCD.
A lot of people want me to do some generalized wine tips, so I'm going to do one.
A wine tip. Finally, a wine tip. Yes, we all love wine tips.
This is a type of wine. I'm going to discuss a type of wine. It's a sweet wine that people should check out. And they're available if you go to if you're in a town where there's a liquor store that we have a wine guy who knows anything that they're doing, you'll probably find an example of this product. It's a Rhone wine. It's a sweet wine. I've discussed on the show Sauternes, which is, I think, one of the great sweet wines.
That's,
and you have
that's what you get the ladies with.
The ladies love the Sauternes.
They love the Sauternes.
And then there's also German sweet wines that are worth noting, which include Baron Auslese and Trockenbaron Auslese.
Oh, the Trockenbaron, yes.
Trockenbarons are very expensive, and it means that Baron Auslese means it's a late harvest of specific berries. And Trockenbaron Auslese is a wine that is dried berries, basically raisins turned into wine. And there's another type of German sweet wine called an ice wine, which doesn't really hold a candle, I don't think, to these other two. But the wine I'm going to promote, which is an inexpensive, obscure wine that you can find, anyone who knows anything about wine will know about this, Baumes de Venise.
Can you spell that for the jury?
Baumesdevenise. Baumes de Venise. And Baumes de Venise, and it's used and sometimes referred to as Muscat Baumes de Venise. But the appellation, I believe, is Baumes de Venise. But it's a Muscat wine that is incredibly sweet, and it's not super sweet, that's sickening. It's not a sickening sweet wine. It's just a incredibly floral, like the best. It's a very specific Muscat grape called the Orange Muscat. And it's only pretty much, I mean, muscats are a variety of muscats are grown all over the place. A lot of them are table grapes. But this particular grape, which is a specialty of this area, makes a fabulous product. This Muscat Baumes de Venise is a killer wine. And if you see it, try it.
How much can we expect to pay for the Baumes de Venise?
$15 maybe.
That's the price. That's what makes it a great tip of the day.
And they're not an expensive, rare, expensive wine like A half ball of Trockenbaren Auslese can cost you $150.
And what do we drink the Balmes de Venise with dinner or après dinner?
After dinner, uh-huh. After dinner, and it's perfect with almost any dessert.
And do you drink it in a big wine glass or one of those little petite thingies?
You could drink it in anything you want.
In a
paper
tumbler.
Cup. It doesn't matter. The stuff is really good.
There it is. Tipoftheday.net. NoAgendaFun.com.
Great advice for you and me. Just the tip with JCB. And sometimes Adam.
Well, you may have to wait for things, but you get such a fabulous tip of the day at the end. It just makes it all worth it, doesn't it? I like it. I'm going to go out and get me a Balme de Venise. Balme de Venise and Iran. It's a beautiful thing. Coming up next on the No Agenda stream, for all 2,400 of you, I don't know how many are left, we've got random thoughts. Random thoughts on the stream, so make sure you check that out. We have two brand new mixes. We've got Hugh Allison. He's been around for a long time, as has Danny Luce, who also returns to the end of show mixes. We love it when you guys do that. We really do. And, of course, we will return on Thursday with another media deconstruction extravaganza right here on the No Agenda Show. And, as always, you do it as a public service. So please remember us at noagendadonations.com. Until then, coming to you from Fredericksburg, Texas, right here in the Texas Hill Country. In the morning, everybody, I'm Adam Curry.
And from Northern Silicon Valley, where we're hoping the sun comes out sometime soon. Hasn't happened for a week. I'm John C. Dvorak.
We return on Thursday. Again, remember us, noagendadonations.com. Until then, adios, mofos, a hooey hooey, and such.
Okay, Boomer. How you doing out there? When I was a kid.
Yeah, seen that one of those days where it just seems like everybody's getting on your case, from your teacher all the way down to your best girlfriend.
It's all dumb.
Well, you know, I used to have them just about all the time.
In my day.
But I found a way to get out of it.
Yeah, but that was the end of it.
Let me tell you about it.
Okay, Boomer.
Sitting in the classroom.
When I was a kid, I remember there was two things that there was interesting to switch over. There was like, when I was a kid, it was a big deal that kids got caught smoking in the bathroom.
Ooh.
When you were a kid, your parents kept you in the bathroom. You know, I'm still stunned.
Only a boomer. Only a boomer.
And there, everyone's bitching about it. Well, it's like it should have never begun.
Ooh,
by
yes.
The time I was out of college, it was like, oh no, nobody smokes it, but they smoke pot in the bathroom.
No agenda.
Now all of a sudden they went from smoking cigarettes to pot in the bathroom.
Cervical cancer's back.
I made my sons get it immediately.
Because they don't know anything. They do not have knowledge.
And who the hell this must think he is?
The Nazi rebel, baby.
Not conscious. I get it.
Not, no, no, no. Not just not conscious. They don't know anything. Really obvious why anyone would pay for ChatGPT Plus at all.
I made my sons get it immediately.
Yeah. Pretending to be outraged.
They make mistakes.
Oh, you want to use our money?
$20 million on a new Sesame Street show in Iran to combat disinformation in Kazakhstan.
That's the kind of thing that you should get fired from a company for. They should boot you out the door. Reduction in pajama time with providers who are using Nabla.
Nabla is the AI software company.
We have to fight this in the Congress. We have to fight this in the streets.
And it's Nabla?
No. I made my sons get it immediately.
No, not this Nabla.
Nabla should boot you out the door. You don't have thoughts. You don't even know how these things fully function. And then ran it in the worst way back.
I made my sons get it.
Thing. They do not have knowledge.
Yes.
The Nazi rebel, baby.
Cervical cancer is back.
All right, we've got to take to the streets.
The best podcast in the universe.
Adios, mofo.
Dvorak.org/NA.
That's what I call a great podcast.